Welcome back to We Got Goosebumps, a podcast dedicated to the landmark horror series for children, written by R.L. Stine back in the 1990s. I'm your creepy neighborhood vagabond? Sorry, that's your bit. Dylan, and this is...
Hey, I'm your station wagon loving dad, Travis. I love him. I love the name station wagon. Because they're not stationary. They're mobile wagons. They're dynamic wagons.
I want to talk about the most unbelievable portion of this book, and that is how excited these four people are over a station wagon. Like I can understand the kids being excited, because the kids, like, I never had a new car growing up. I don't think I've ever had a new car. I would have been very excited for that. Or like when we got a new car that had 100,000 miles on it, I was very excited about that. It's like a new thing. Like you find the, dig around in the glove box and see if there's, how many cigarette lighters are in this one.
Right.
Not one in the back seat anymore, but that's why is the dad so excited about this?
Dude, my family was so jazzed about station wagons. I might have even brought this up last time, but we had two station wagons.
Oh, that's,
we had a rusty one, and we had a shinier one that we used for special occasions. We were station wagon loving. My dad was jazzed about a good station wagon.
I think maybe this was just the hook for you for this book, was just the station wagon coming in. And you're just like,
I loved it. And we had a station wagon during the time these books came out. This is very prescient. This feels like I'm in this book. Dude,
I feel like
I'm in it.
A little bit. Yeah. One of the characters has your name, not your first name.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The brother.
Yeah.
Brother Terry. Yeah. It's a good name. It's a strong name. It's a real strong name.
A name you could build a foundation on.
Good.
A family.
You really could.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%.
And, I got so distracted by station wagons, I forgot to let everybody know that we are currently talking about book 4 in the series, Say Cheese and Die, which was released in November 1992. This book might be Travis's favorite, or at least the one he's most excited about since he named our Twitter account after it. But
it's a good Twitter account. It's a good name.
It is.
Say Cheese and a Pod?
It's also definitely shorter than the email address, so you've got me beat there.
The Twitter account also just sounds like a name for a different Goosebumps podcast. But just so everyone knows, Say Cheese and Pod and We Got Goosebumps, one and the same.
At least we've locked down on if we ever want to do a spinoff about fine cheeses, just saying the
That's
names
right.
of fine cheeses, not tasting them, but just saying, like, I do like a nice Wensleydale to say. I don't want to actually taste it. Brie
I like
is
that.
Fun to say as well. Yeah.
Almost like the Petey's Power Hour, but with cheese. A little cheese
and no
tasting.
Facts. No.
No facts.
No facts, no tasting. We're literally just going to go through names of cheeses that we like to say. It's Say Cheese.
And try to rhyme them.
And Pod. Maybe. I mean, it could be
Havarti,
anything.
Have Farty. You know? And it's that for an hour and a half. It's
exactly.
90 minutes. And there's 100 episodes. I mean, you would think it would get dry, but it doesn't. It's crumbly like a feta.
I would even say that it might even age like a nice cheese. If I was that monstrous. As we always do, we're gonna talk to you about, we're just completely tangenting. I'm not even doing a nice tangent back to the plot. I'm sorry. That wasn't a good segue, but we're getting back to the book that we started talking about, which is Say Cheese and Die.
Mm-hmm.
But Travis.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to kill your entire family with a camera before?
Yes, it's harder than you think. You have to have a special camera, an evil, demented camera to pull it off. What I was trying to do was with one of those old dispensable Kodaks that you would get at the dollar store and take 25 pictures. You couldn't see any of them for weeks. You had to just snap around with. You weren't even sure when it was done. It would show one and you're like, do I have one picture left or no picture left? I'm not confident in this number. But you love sliding the clickety-clackety thing. But at the very end, when it would continue to clickety-clack, that's when you would know, uh-oh, I didn't have a picture left, and my baby just took its first steps. Oops.
Yeah, that last picture was such a tease, because you hold it in reserve just in case.
Yeah.
Or do you risk just doing a quick snapshot? That's always the best.
Just do something.
Just do something quick. Be like, yeah. Hey. It'll probably end up being the best picture the thing, man. On the roll.
During field trips in elementary school, you know, we would be equipped with those cameras. My parents would send me with like three. You know, you're going to DC with your friends. Take a light here. Here's 75 still picture opportunities that you have, Travis. And I would come back with like six left. And be like, I didn't know what to take a picture of. It was so stressful at the end. I didn't know. Did anything happen after you went to the Washington Monument? Tons of stuff happened. I just wasn't sure if it was a good enough for the picture.
You're doing the video game thing where like, is this item too big of an item for this battle? I might want to hold off until the final boss.
Exactly. Hoard everything always. And that's leaked into my psyche quite a bit as an adult, given the number of video games and Goosebumps novels that I have. But I do have a small story about a camera that's sad. I bought my mom a camera for for her birthday one year, and she was in one of her manic swings downward, and she said that was the worst gift she had ever gotten, and she threw it away right in front of me. And you know what? We made amends on that several years later on her deathbed, and I even snapped a picture of her with my phone and said, gotcha, bitch. I gotcha. I got her. It was a Canon, actually. It was a good camera. Right before to her credit, it was right before digital came out. This was not a digital camera. If I had waited like a year, you know, I'd have gotten my mom a nice camera, but I ended up getting her like one of those ones that require film, 1 hour photo crap. She did us all a favor. What?
You just,
it's fine.
I feel.
Did you get goosebumps?
I did get goosebumped. I don't know what, like, tear bumps. I don't know what to call what you give me on every episode.
It's okay. I turned out fine.
The tragic giggles. That's it. Yeah, you give me the tragic giggles.
Tragic giggles.
I want to laugh because what you're saying is told in a funny way, but I also want to cry at the same time. The tragic giggles.
Yeah. The only way to get the truth out of me is through a little bit of giggling. So I'm glad you were here to play along. What about you, Dylan? Do you have any memorable stories about saying cheese, dying, or taking a picture?
No, I in fact, I don't have any specific stories about cameras except the fact that I've had a weird obsession with cameras my entire life. And I need to actually, let's backtrack that a little bit and say by weird obsession, I don't mean putting them in strange places or recording people and uncompromising. I mean, I just really liked having cameras, not even necessarily using them. Just like if I'm in a thrift store and I see kind of a funky looking camera, boom. Why do I need a tiny little box camera that has its own little leather holster so that you can put it on belt and walk around looking like the coolest dude in high school? I just loved cameras. And it is, I took photography in high school for 3 years. Like, I actually learned how to, properly develop film. And we used to crack open those Instamatic cameras and reload them and send them out. And that was the first year photo students got to play with, instead of the Canons and Nikons that we had in the class. But yeah. So I was really big with cameras. And then cameras became, literally everywhere and kind of lost my fascination to some degree, but.
That's fair. I dated a girl once whose dad collected cameras, and I thought that guy was weird. So, I'll say you're a little bit less weird. So that's good. Not all camera collectors are strange, I guess you could say.
I appreciate that. But I would totally have been like Greg. I was basically Greg in that regard, where it's just like, oh yeah, a cool old camera? Like, sign me up.
Oh, Greg being one of the characters in the book that we're about to describe. I wanted to ask before we get into the story, there were a couple more questions I wanted to ask that tie into this book. One, have you ever had a strange premonition?
All the time, because I'm a little paranoid and superstitious at the same time. So I will take anything as being a strange premonition, to be honest. I also like to sometimes text some of my friends and say, like, got a bad feeling today. Just on the off chance that something bad might happen that day, I can point to that text and be like, called it.
Wow.
Yeah. You can't do that too often, though, because then they're just like, you've said this like 30 times in the last 6 months and nothing's happened. It's like, one of these days, you're going to be
called it. I knew you would say that. No, that's good. I haven't had anything strange as in, like, life-altering. Like, I didn't predict a wreck or anything, or, like, something, you know, that threatened anyone's life. And I guess, thankfully, I don't want that burden to bear. But one time, I did have a dream that the baseball that I lost was under a certain hay bale out on the farm. And I thought, I bet it is there. It was just a dream. I had lost the baseball months ago, maybe even a year ago. I was like, maybe that's where it went. Went out there, ran my hand like an idiot underneath a hay bale where rattlesnakes live, and pulled out a friggin' baseball and was like, oh, look at this old worthless waterlogged baseball that now has to go in the trash. I found it. So that was a strange premonition.
I feel like your brain was just rummaging through its little box of things. You're just like, oh yeah, the baseball. Like that just has to be what brains do when you sleep. Is just the same way that you might organize your attic. Is just going through boxes and be like, this poem I wrote 15 years ago that got me rejected by that girl is into. Be sure to remind him of that in the morning.
Yeah. At least it didn't remind you of it before you went to bed. That's always the worst when you have the cringe sleeps and you're like, yeah, I know that happened. Can we get to bed?
No. We need to dissect what you said. Just this one sentence. We've highlighted that one for you.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to wind that back. Slow.
No one remembers but you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Although
did you ever have a neighborhood creeper? Go ahead.
No, I read one of those clickbaity articles once, and someone said, like, oh, once I fell out of a tree in a public park, and this family at a picnic saw me and ran over to help me, and then, like, 10 years later, I'm in the mall, and the mom bumps into me. She's like, oh, it's the tree, girl who fell out of the tree! And she's just like, oh, God. And then someone else commented to that, and was just like, oh, God, how much do people remember? Am I the guy who, like, put his dick in the toaster? You know, like, it's just... I mean, that would be memorable, honestly.
People remember sixth grade, Dylan. They remember when you brought the toaster and put your wiener in it. They didn't forget that.
I did get stuck in a pair of handcuffs in middle school.
Go on.
I mean, there's not much to tell.
Why were you in them? Where did you go after?
Oh,
Is this a Gerald's Game situation?
Yeah, well, God. I mean, I was... 12, so that would be the worst adaptation of that particular book on our children's book podcast. We're going to spend 20 minutes on tangents today. On each tangent, Travis.
Yes, each one.
Each one. We're going to move on from handcuffs.
We'll bring it back.
We can bring it back.
Next episode, folks. I will make sure that he talks about it. Well, I wanted to bring up, we had one neighborhood creeper because there's a creeper in this book. You know, he was creepy to children. He was actually probably a nice guy that just happened to have a real bad hunchback. But as a kid, he was terrifying. And he also lived, like, behind everyone's house in a kind of a ratty old shack sort of thing. And he would walk around and pick up all of the litter. So he was doing a good thing, right? He was just very quiet and always behind you. That was the problem. It wasn't who he was or what he was doing. It was just like, make some noise. Let us know when you're nearby. And his name was Bear. I don't think he had a real first name. So that was a creepy guy.
So my problem is I've lived in cities my whole life for the most part. So there's always someone creepy sauntering through a neighborhood. Like, I never really lived.
You had several bears, ironically, in yours.
Yeah. Well, and also in Durham. No, we had deer. That was more deer. But no, there's no real standout creepy guy necessarily. Or I was just too young and I tend to take
you
people...
You were the creepy guy. If you look around and there's no creepy guys, look in the mirror. That's what I say, people.
That's true. I always take people at face value. Like, if you came up to me and said, like, I'm a pretty good guy, I'd be like, yeah, you are. Let's go be friends. which is partially why I'm not allowed on the internet anymore. Like, I'm only allowed to talk to you now, actually. So
that's how I got you on this podcast. I was like, hey, I'm a pretty nice guy, and I need another pair of lips for a podcast I'm thinking about doing. Speaking of a pair of lips, let's move into the cover of the book. where there are actually no lips. There are no lips on the cover of the book. Dylan, people are always talking about my segue game, and it is on fire again. The cover of Say Cheese and Die features a very, very dead, but also quite alive family. We got a dad at the grill holding, I'm going to just say that's a Coca-Cola can. Not really hiding itself from being one, really. He's a full skeleton. He's wearing an apron. He's got a nice chef's cap on top of his head. Flipping some burgers, eating meat when he has no meat himself. And then what I assume is the wife, the mother, she's cackling. She thinks, oh, this meat flipping's hilarious. She's holding an enormous plate of hamburgers for what appears to be a family of four. I don't know what they're on to there, but they're going to get an iron, not deficiency, but efficiency. Too much iron.
No, I think those are just the buns. So she's got like 20 buns for three patties that are on the grill currently.
Hmm. Well, skeletons don't have brains. They're not great at math.
Never mind. I take it back. I retract my comment.
Also, we have two fellas in the back. We got one with a backward cap on. Looks like a teenage kid. Another one in the back with sunglasses for some odd reason, and they're sitting around already eating hamburgers, so I don't know who. Some other people are bound to show up to this cookout. There's just too much food. But this is on a Polaroid, and it's one of my favorite covers in the series, Dylan. It has a good mix of obvious death and horror, but also it's kind of evil clowning at you a little bit. They're all smiling and laughing, and they seem unfazed by their demise. And in the upper left, it says, "One picture is worth a thousand screams." Love it.
Yeah, I this is definitely one of just instant classic covers. There's nothing. I have no critiques for this one, like I might have had for like for Welcome to Dead House. I always want to call it something else, and I don't, like, there's just something in my head that wants to say, not Welcome to Dead House, but, like, Haunted House of Horrors. But that's not what it's called.
I want to say Haunted, too. Want to throw Haunted
in
there.
It's a dead house. It's not a haunted house.
It's very dead.
But,
And you know, that this tree in the background of this Polaroid on this cover, that's the tree size and girth I imagined in Welcome to Dead House, which would be just untenable for a small child to shoulder over.
I want you to let go of the pain that the ending of that book has caused you. A pain apparently greater than some of the tragedies we've discussed on this podcast, because you've... That one seems to have hurt you.
I think about that tree a lot. Looking at 2003, no points off there. 2009, though, not a fan. Not a fan of that one. In that one, it's a more modernized camera with a long lens on the ground. There's a reflection of a skull in it. The lens is cracked. I mean, it makes a point, but it's not the classic. And also, there's something about the colors I don't like.
And there's also the fact that there's, like, is that a dead person's hand? Like, you never see dead bodies on children. Like, this is a little graphic, especially in a book where, you know, for the most part, only one person dies, and that's not Spider's hand. Spider had gnarled hands that had been twisted by evil labor.
Spidey, yeah.
These hands are soft, you know, the hands of someone who's not worked a day of their life.
I don't know. Those look like adult hands to me. Those don't look like a 12-year-old's hands. Those look like they've been around
child.
A bar of soap for a few years.
I'm saying, you know, I'm spoiled, you know, I don't know. Rich.
Oh, okay.
Privileged. Look at that camera. That's a nice camera.
The point
being,
I don't like that cover. The original is the better cover. Dylan, I know your favorite part of the whole friggin' episode is the international covers. Please lead us off here.
It is the only prep work I do for this show, aside from reading the book, is looking at these covers to tell Travis how much I love these covers, except for the British one. Let's get the British one over with. It's got a creepy clown camera smothered in jelly. And I don't know what this is. It's marmalade this time, right? This is definitely marmalade. There's no way it's anything but just jelly.
It's in a greasy cheese. It's greasy cheese.
But it's like if a camera was a creepy clown doll and it's spitting out pictures, and the pictures are, one of them looks like a person being hanged, which seems a bit much.
No, I think those are the pictures from the story. You got the baseball picture in the top left.
That's, oh, yeah, that's him falling off the stairs. Right, the feather boa. Yeah. Although I think he's playing cricket, not baseball.
Is a little wild. I think that's supposed to be when the girl disappears. We'll get to all this in a minute, folks. And the best part of this cover to me is that the camera does have a face. I do think that's kind of fun.
Don't like it. Then we have kind of the European continents photo, which has, spider as a 1,000-year-old man looming behind, I'm assuming Michael, because it's kind of a chubby child. But he doesn't have red hair.
Yeah. France, man, they're of a style. I'll say that. I don't know that I like it any more or less than the UK version.
Oh, I like it more.
Yeah?
Because at least it has, it doesn't have jelly on it. That's just a point in its favor. I don't have to spend 20 minutes looking to see, is this jelly? Is this supposed to be scary? But let's...
I'll give you this, Dylan. This little nugget. You know, that the cover kind of reminds me of Phantasm.
Yeah, the tall man from Phantasm. Yep. But the 2009 Italian cover is one of my favorite covers, which is just, it looks like it's the same photograph over and over again, actually, on the Polaroid, but it's of a skull rushing towards the image with flaming eyes, and it's done in kind of this painterly style that looks really cool. If you're a big fan of Italian horror, it actually has that kind of 70s Italian giallo feel. I'm sure I'm saying that word incorrectly. But,
Like flames inside the skull eyes a little bit, like a candle flame almost, to make them glow.
Gorgeous.
It's really interesting. And I loved it.
Let's wrap it up with Korea again, because again, I do love the Korean covers. Although the Japanese cover is also... The Japanese cover is also very good. But the Korean one is just, again, it's they've all got really cool stylistic designs for the same theme, basically. And I just really love, we should post these somehow, or at least link back to them somehow. Because they're gorgeous covers.
We'll put these will all be in the show notes, and the cover that we like best of the U.S. variety will be the cover for the podcast. So some apps will pick that up. But yeah, I love the covers, man. They're always fun. So the one by Tim Jacobus here for the U.S. is, or the, I guess it's North America. Maybe it's specifically U.S. I'm not real clear on that. But that's the one that I grew up looking at. That's the one I like. And honestly, one of my favorite covers in the series. So moving on from the cover, let's open the flap. Let's get into the plot.
Oh, yeah, we talk about the book on this show.
We got to talk about the book on the show. That's the whole point, Dylan. Come on, buddy.
I forgot. Sorry. It's kind of like when you go to the movies, you know, as we did a century ago, when you went to the movie theater and you have the trailers. I always get so into the trailers that when they stop and the movie starts, I, A, get a little bit disappointed, and B, am genuinely surprised that it's almost like there's a treat after the trailers I got to watch.
You know what, that's we both have that. That's called ADHD. We got hyper-focused, and then we got disappointed when our thing was taken away. We didn't like it. We get upset.
And I do enjoy those 90-second to 2-minute movies much more than the 90-minute to 2-hour-long movies.
I know. This I love so, trailers. So much better when they're shorter. Anyway, chapter one, we're going to meet a bunch of kids here. This is no longer just a sibling and a main character. This is going to be a gang of friends, basically the friends cast here. We have Michael Warner, Greg Banks, Doug Bird, he goes by Bird, Arthur, and Sherry Walker. Greg will be the one that we follow the most, right? Greg's our kind of our main character.
Yeah, Greg is basically described as the protagonist of every children's movie in the 90s, the blonde-haired kid, probably parted in the middle, but not a bowl cut.
Devon Sawa. Yeah. I imagine Devon Sawa. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a bit of a Devon Sawa, but he doesn't play sports. Actually, the sporty one is Bird.
Well, that's because Terry didn't sign him up.
Bird is a tall, lanky, redheaded kid. So Greg's brother didn't sign him up for baseball, even though why didn't Greg sign himself up? Don't be so entitled, Greg. Michael is sort of the chubby kid, I think. He's the funny one that likes to hang out and, you know, he's kind of a bit player. He's a small role in the book, really. Barely comes up.
He specifically described as not being funny. And I'm concerned
I think he's funny.
I'm concerned that you thought the small chubby child was...
That's me.
Yeah,
that's
I know.
Me. I'm Michael.
Yep.
Stop it.
I knew you were Michael. Yep. Literally,
Michael's funny. He's charming.
The second thing R.L. Stine says about him, aside from being like, I wouldn't say he's fat, but... Which, come on. Like, he's 12. Don't... He'll grow up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what I did. I got a little less fat when I got taller. And then we have Sherry Walker, who is, I guess she's just the reasonable one. She's kind of level-headed.
No. Did we read the same book? No, Greg is the reasonable one. Sherry is the not nice person who, on her birthday, was, take pictures with your magic death camera because it's my birthday.
She's a little pushy, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
No, the only one who was saying, stay out of the basement and don't go to that dead house was Greg.
Greg
was me as a child. So I never wanted to do the scary, dangerous thing or the thing that might get you in trouble. And instead of my group of friends listening to me and not doing that, they would just leave. So I just...
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that 100%. We were the same guy, except I was smaller and fatter. They live in Pitt's Landing. They say Pitt's Landing is the pits, which that makes sense. And the kids are bored one day, and they're thinking, you know, what do we do? And then a Cocker Spaniel greets them, and I'm thinking, Trigger, is that you, bud? From the last book, Cocker Spaniels all over the place in these Goosebumps novels.
I'm have to assume that they had a Cocker Spaniel and it was just put it in the book. I see so much of just R.L. Stine. Anytime the dad comes up and like, R.L. Stine, you need to stop driving so fast on the highway because that's clearly something the missus doesn't like too much. Like anytime the dad does something that gets scolded for or just talking down to.
I do the same. I definitely project all of that onto Steiny. Also, just maybe... Spoiler alert for the next book. I'm pretty sure there's a Cocker Spaniel in the fifth one, too. So the Cocker Spaniel must be a thing. There's no other, either that or he, honest to God, knows no other dog breeds.
Well, in the first book, he's just like, oh, it's a dog. And I feel like maybe his editor was just like, you can't just say, like, it's a dog. You have to say, like, what kind of dog so that people can imagine what it is. And he's like, Cocker Spaniel. I'm taking it back. Maybe he doesn't own a dog. He's a cat person. He's like, everyone likes dogs, so I'll put a dog in the book. It's a dog. Give me a dog. They're all Cocker Spaniels. In the Goosebumps universe, every dog is a Cocker Spaniel. There is no dog.
You might
dog.
Be right. We'll have to chart it. And folks, if you're listening at home, pull out your bingo card and put a piece down for Cocker Spaniel because it landed again. So it's not, the name of the dog is not actually Trigger. The dog doesn't really come up a ton in the book, but there's a dog in it. And the kids decide to walk through town and they come to the old Kaufman house. And Dylan, when I heard about the old Kaufman house, I thought for sure, I was like, has Dylan written a short horror story about the Kaufman house? Just the name Kaufman house made me think of you, buddy.
Are you trying to say I've been coughing a lot during this podcast?
You've coughed a little bit during the podcast, but also I feel like I can hear you say in your... Best New England.
Oh,
the old
Kaufman
house.
Kaufman. No, it's Kaufman. You're saying it
Kaufman.
Wrong. No, that's your accent. My accent's correct.
Close?
Yeah. The accent that I've made up. Kaufman.
Kaufman.
Okay, pretend you're Fran Drescher like you do. And then...
Kaufman.
Now order a coffee.
Can I get a coffee?
And now say Kaufman.
Kaufman.
There you go. Now
is that better?
Yeah. There you go. You could definitely pass for Yankee now. You would not be.
Hey, y'all.
Stoned. I don't know what we do.
The Kaufman House is a legendary house with haunted rumors. We all know them. Clearly abandoned. and they think about exploring it, but something jumps out of the tall weeds at Greg. God dang, we're not even out of the first chapter yet. We got our first cliffhanger. Bom, bom, bom. Chapter 2.
It was the Cocker Spaniel, because it's always the Cocker Spaniel.
It was the Cocker Spaniel. We knew it was the fucking... God, we just met that dog.
How many times do you think a Cocker Spaniel has been responsible for a cliffhanger in these books? Because I feel like Petey was responsible for, like, five cliffhangers on his own.
Yeah. Yeah, and Trigger tons. I mean, Trigger owns most of the cliffhangers in Monster Blood. So
he's in the other 20 books, too, that are about Monster Blood, too, I think, because they're... Well, not all of them, because they move away from Evan at some point, don't they? Like the fourth one.
I don't know. That's why we're doing this. We'll have to find out.
Yeah. We're not experts.
I have no idea.
We're clearly not
experts. We'll get there one of these days. We'll have to bring on R.L. Stine and ask him a bunch of trivia. I was going to say trigia, but that's a tricky word. They want to enter this Kaufman house. The kids do. Well, all but Greg. Greg, being the sensible one, says, "You know what, guys? No, I gotta get it. I told my parents I'd be home. I gotta get it. I don't feel good. My shoes are untied. A ton of excuses."
He's very bad at them.
He's not great. They do end up, going inside the house. And, before they go inside the house, though, they describe an old creepy gentleman that must live in this house, right? And so, right before they get ready to do this, Greg says, "Are we really doing this? I mean, what about Spidey?" Now, R.L. Stine describes Spidey. He says, "Spidey was a weird-looking man of 50 or 60 they'd all seen lurking about town. He dressed entirely in black and crept along on long, slender legs. He looked just like a black spider. So the kids all called him Spidey. Most likely he was a homeless guy. No one really knew anything about him, where he'd come from, where he lived, but a lot of kids had seen him hanging around the Kaufman house." So we get a little description there of Spidey, who seems to be creeping the kids out a little bit. He must live in the Kaufman house, they think. So Greg's like, "I don't want to go in there and meet Spidey."
I'm going to be honest with you. If there's anything that's going to make me stop adventuring in an abandoned house or anything like that, it's knowing that there's a real person there. That's more terrifying to me. Back when I worked at Borders, during the bankruptcy, that's when I decided to jump on board with that company. I worked at the one in, none of this matters to you, but for people who know, in Downtown Crossing in Boston. Now it's a Walgreens. It's a giant Walgreens. Used to be a bank, though. It used to be many things. And apparently, we found out, once they were going to bankruptcy, that we had to clean out every weird little snook and cranny in this building that had been used for storage. And if you got into the elevator and you had the special key, you could stop on the floor between floors, which actually was this whole secret middle floor that was basically like a commercial attic. Like, just stuff from, like,
what?
From the whole lifetime of the store and from, like, previous tenants that had been there. Sold it all. But then there was also a door. No one knows where the door went, so a friend and I decide we're going to go exploring. So during our lunch break, we get the key, go up to the secret half floor between floors, go down into this doorway and up these long rickety stairs and then down some long rickety stairs. I don't know where they go.
Whoa.
We go all the way up to the top and they just end in a brick wall. Like there's just nothing there anymore. Yeah. We go all the way down to the bottom and now there's like, we see like this big cement space and like fluorescent lighting that's like, da-da-da-da. And then we see a maintenance man. We book it out of there because like we could get in trouble. But like, you know, it's just, like, it's not being fun the moment it's just like, it's a janitor. Yeah, scramble. Inhabited. We got to beat feet. But that's how exactly I'd be like, oh, a homeless guy lives here. We need to go, you guys. Like this is someone's space. Like it's no longer.
Yeah.
It's not a
It's no longer
adventure.
Uncharted territory.
It's, or he might kill you. His name's Spidey. Like that's not
like
a
imagine
name.
if the Goonies went down there and got in that ship and there was a guy in there, they'd be like, ah, shit. I thought this was our special thing. You were already in here?
Man,
how did you get in this ship?
And it's just the local homeless guy, Cottonmouth. And he's
called Cottonmouth, yeah. Should drink more water. Does a lot of Adderall. well, They do go inside the house. Greg can't sway the group. He folds. They all go. And they notice spooky things like a giant oval stain on the carpet, bunch of disarray, rats, probably rat poop, rats in the kitchen. They hear creaks and bangs, you know, old house stuff like my dad described to us when we were scared to death we were going to get intruded upon in the middle of the woods that one night. You know, we've been through them. Rocks in the pipe, perhaps, maybe. Raccoons playing frisbee with the trash can lids. You never know what kind of noises can come from a house in the middle of the night. But then they come to the basement, and Bird, our tall, lanky, red-headed, athletic co-protagonist, I'll call him, he ventures into the basement alone, and when the others go to find him, they hear him scream, "Help! It's got me!" from the top of the steps. Oh my gosh, cliffhanger, bum, bum, bum! And if you're keeping count at home on those bingo cards, folks, we have an old house reference from book one. Go ahead and put a little, I don't know what you're using at home for your pieces, but go ahead and put a piece on old house. We have a basement. We just went to a basement. Stay out of the basement. We got that. Go ahead and put a piece on that. And we've got a Cocker Spaniel we already referenced. So we've combined about three different inspirations from previous books already. We're just now hitting chapter three. Dylan, take it away.
Wait, 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 wait. Not only is there a basement, but they say stay out of the basement. At some point,
they do say that.
They actually say it.
Mm-hmm.
And just like in Stay Out of the Basement, Bird was, he was just goofing. He wasn't being electrified.
Just goofing.
He was just goofing. He was just goofing.
Goofing.
You know how they goof.
Man.
Lots of kids goofing in this book.
Oh my gosh.
And to be fair, the number of times I pretended to be dead or be like murdered by something to terrify my parents, I'm sure, after a certain point, it stopped being, they stopped coming. Which was concerning. So then I had to like step up my game. I like lay my clothes out on the floor as if I just vanished out of them. Strangely, they did not ever believe that I just disappeared.
That's weird. Yeah. I bet you did a good job.
I did. I even put the underwear in there too. Like I didn't miss any details. The socks were inside the pant leg, you know, like.
So then you're somewhere else completely nude waiting for somebody to go, "Where's Dylan?"
To be clever, I would do this right before I took a shower. So, like, it was, you know, like, all right, just gonna lay out my trap that will fool everybody, and then I'm gonna go take my shower. So it's clear where Dylan is, and also, no one just disappears. My parents saw through every one of my clever jinx?
Hijinks?
Maybe hijinks is what I was going for. We'll say
more of a low jinx, what you were pulling there. Interesting. Well, again, Bird was just goofing, and honestly, folks, if you get a cliffhanger, I will say before chapter 12, it's probably going to be somebody goofing or a dog.
Or a hand on the shoulder.
Can't forget those hands on the shoulders. Anyway, we explore the basement. We find some dress-up clothes. We got a boa, maybe some chiffon, some high heels, some old lipstick. What's going on in here? And a makeshift platform near a curtain. What is this, a photo booth? What is happening down here? That's a weird thing to find. And Greg, he finds a little crank to a vise. But when he twists it, a hidden compartment unlocks, reveals, a camera is hidden inside this little makeshift compartment. Bum, bum, bum. Chapter 4.
I don't know. I mean, I'm finding out more and more that we were the same child. I would have lost my goddamn mind if I had found a secret compartment as a child.
Oh, no joke.
I still to this day look for secret compartments.
Dude, everywhere. When you go into a library, do you push every single book looking for a door?
You don't have to look for every book.
Because I know I do.
You just want the ones against a wall or something. Those freestanding shelves are that's a fool's game.
Wait,
don't go for the freestanding.
I've been wasting my time in the middle of the library.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you want the ones, you just want the shelves that are against a wall and an inner wall too. What I like to do is get the plans out for any building that I know I'm going to be in and see if like the dimensions of the outside don't match what they had on those plans. Because, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I do the same thing. Yeah. A lot of the local architects are really annoyed by me and know me by name.
There is a thing in my closet. It's just a wooden, it looks like a bench, like you if you wanted to sit inside of a closet and then shut the door on yourself. I don't know what it's like. It looks like a box, though. I've tried to open it as much as I can. like until the boards start creaking, and I'm like, I'm just pulling up nails. This isn't something open. I'm staring at it now, and it's making me furious. I want to see what's in that box. That's not a box.
What if there's a? There might be a camera in there.
It's Dylan. Probably just like heating elements for like just some the pipe distribution system for the steam heat in my building.
It's like, probably that's just a place for old ladies to sit when they put their shoes on. But there might be a camera inside. Now, Greg here, much like you, Dylan, very interested in cameras. He had been saving up for a better one, so this is kind of a jackpot situation for him. He's about to steal a homeless man's camera. And if this one is valuable enough to hide, they wonder, why didn't anyone take it with them? You know, this being an abandoned home. So maybe it does belong to Spidey? If he's been holed up here, maybe for some reason he really protects his camera.
I mean, I appreciate the level of, like, thought they're putting into it as children to be like, you know, this, it doesn't stop them from stealing it anyway, but like, they're still like, I'm sure someone probably owns this. I don't know. But like, and then so everyone stops talking about the camera because Michael, hilarious, funny Michael, who everyone loves in the book.
My guy.
He's got on his two feather boas. He's got on a Stetson and he's just like, take a picture.
Dude, just partying, having a good time.
And they go for the Greg does a common refrain in this book, as I'm sure when you were a child, you always, when you took a picture of people, things, dogs, you're just
still
like,
do it.
Say cheese. And Michael,
you know
being
what? It's
hilarious.
The only way to get a kid to smile that doesn't look like they don't want to be there. If you get them to say cheese, number one, all kids love cheese. So that brings a little bit of delight into the eyes.
Like a golden retriever.
But then you do the act of cheese. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of forms the smile. And you get it right then. It also works on me. I also fall for it. I'll say cheese. I'll do it. So it's a great refrain.
You could use any word that has that kind of like, you know, like say scream. And then everyone's like, oh, wait, what? And so that gives you kind of a mixed smile.
Cheese brings me legit happiness, Dylan. But you know what? You know what this Joker? You know what this Joker Michael says?
No, what does he say?
He says cheddar. But anyway, they realize at that moment that it's an automatic developing camera, or a Polaroid, as you and I might refer to. Now, is Polaroid a brand? Is that why?
Polaroid is a specific. It? Yeah, it's like why you can't say Kleenex or what's the other one? Xerox. You can't say Xerox.
Ah. Right. Well, this is similar to a Polaroid. We learn later it has no defining features. There's no branding on the camera at all, but it does automatically.
So because I listen to these in audio form, do we ever get a good description of what the camera looks like, or does he just say camera and then boom, you have an idea of a camera in your head? Because I don't think he ever says like it has a longer lens on it. We know that because he says he thinks it might be telephoto, so it's probably a little longer than a standard camera lens. But
I know later there's a moment where Sherry tries to break it open where they define some features of it, but I don't think they go in great detail.
Yeah, but she says there's no moving parts, which is concerning on a camera because cameras have a lot of moving parts, generally speaking. Except for a pinhole camera, which is... Never mind.
Is that something that you put over your, we're not going to talk about it. So as the photo comes out, right as the photo comes out of this automatically developing camera, aka Polaroid, the banister that Michael was on gives way. Michael falls. He crashes to the floor. Big bang. Uh-oh. He screams in pain. He's hurt his freaking ankle. The funniest guy has hurt his ankle. No one wants the funny guy to get hurt. That's sad. And as they go to check on him, they hear upstairs. They hear some creaking upstairs. What, the footsteps? Oh, my God. Is it Spidey? Is Spidey here? Are we caught? Oh, God. Dum, dum, dum. Chapter 5.
This is actually the first moment where it's not just a Cocker Spaniel. Like, they hear footsteps getting closer. It's definitely someone. Most likely whoever lives here.
And they're not supposed to be there, so it doesn't really matter who it is.
But
it's bad.
There's not even a squirrel to show them the way out, though. So they've got to pick up Michael. They find, like, other steps that lead to, like, more doors. I'm assuming it's like cellar doors. Like that's what I was thinking.
The twister hatch that we referred to before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The cellar that I wanted as a kid that no longer want as a kid because of the fact that you could have anyone just coming and going just through those big double doors. Yeah. Like you could drive in through those doors. Like, do you want to let in a roving band of bikers into your basement?
Yeah.
No.
Do you want God to suck your dad out of there with a tornado?
Hey.
Helen Hunt?
She eventually won an Oscar, so, you know, there's...
That's fair. Sometimes it pays to lose your dad in a wind fury.
Mm-hmm. F5.
But, so footsteps are coming closer to the basement door. They pick up Michael. They, oh, crap, we gotta go. We better take the funny one with us. And so they pick him up, and you're right. They found some of them steps. They march up. They push on the door. Oh, no, it's locked. And they hear the man upstairs shout, "Who's down there?" Is that Spidey's voice? I don't know. I've never heard him talk. Have you heard him talk?
He kind of had a softer voice in the audiobook. Yeah, he was more kind of
was the voice in the audiobook?
Well, here he's yelling, but it was more like kind of a, like, "Who's down there?" Like, you know, kind of a more sinister.
Because he's old.
A lower. Yeah, yeah. He's not like the dad.
He's every bit of 50, so he's basically knocking on death's door at 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe even 40 years old. Like, it is a children's book, so the parents are probably like 25 each, and then Spidey's like 30, 35. On death's door.
Yeah. On death's door. Well, he smoked menthols his whole life, starting at age 6, so I mean, it really will shorten a man's span. but that door that they were trying to take Michael out of, it doesn't budge, so they're trapped inside this basement with a roving pedophile upstairs screaming at them. Dum dum dum.
I love and hate this cliffhanger because the solution was to try it twice. It's kind of like when you get to
the tree.
Listen,
it's the freaking tree all over again.
I have three options. I tried the first two. What do I do now? So they decide, you know what? We should try and push on this door again. And that door opens the second time. Probably they all went together and Michael was chanting in the back. He's like, 1, 2, 3, push. Doom.
Well, you know, you jest, but I think adding a detail like that would help. If it was like Michael or not Michael, he's injured. He's so funny. But, like, let's say Greg runs up and throws a shoulder into the door and it doesn't budge. That's your cliffhanger. And then you open up the next chapter with, okay, well, then let's just all run at it and see if we can barge through it. I think that helps. But we don't get that here. Not saying that I'm better than R.L. Stein, but I think that could help.
I feel like in that scenario,
but also in the tree. I'm going to go back to the tree, Dylan. The tree did the same thing. There's no reason a tree just suddenly falls down after you push it twice. So, I mean, the door feels like another... just cheap chapter switch. I'm not mad about it. It's a children's book. I get it. It's fine. But I'm just saying, could have helped. Sumi, chapter 6, second push did the trick. Now what?
Well, they book it. You know, Michael's ankle's better. He's always been a fast healer. So they manage to, like, get out of the house, down the street, and they see Spidey staring at them through the windows of the house, like hands pressed to glass as if he sees like a new puppy in the window he'd like to have.
Probably the most
inappropriate analogy I could have used there. We're not going to work with that. We're going to move on to, he sees some children that stole his camera.
There you go.
More accurate and less creepy.
Very.
But Greg is, you know, they manage to go to Michael's house because he's obviously probably... I don't know why they go to Michael's house. Is he the closest? Does he have the best snacks? Are his parents not home?
They probably had to help him get there. Although, I will say, at some point, right after they get out in the yard, suddenly Michael is able to walk without any help. So, I mean, maybe he just recovers fast.
It's the adrenaline.
The adrenaline.
Just he powers through it.
But, yeah, maybe Michael's was just the first on the stop.
And that's how he knew he's going to be a terrific athlete in high school.
Because he's hilarious. That's how you know. Greg is pretty worried. He's like, I don't want to go back to Spidey's house again. But the others, they didn't think it was a big deal, which I think is kind of weird. Like, that's how you know your friends are psychopaths, in my opinion. Because I feel like what they went through was kind of scary.
I feel like all Greg has bad friends. None of Greg's friends, except Michael. Michael doesn't really do much. I feel like Michael's just kind of like, yeah, I want to hang out. Like, but he's not really...
Solid kid.
But I think it's Bird and Sherry that are the two... The more sinister...
Instigators and... Yeah, sinister.
Yeah. They're going to end up in juvie or dead by 100%. The time they're 16. Yeah. Like, just...
Yeah. Sherry might end up dead before we get too far.
Mm-hmm. Like, Bird just driving his Trans Am, takes a curve too fast and just...
Yeah, soars through the air like a bird until he hits a tree.
Except he lands, yeah.
Well, Michael wants to see his photo. He's like, hey, man, you took that picture of me right before, you know, I fell off that banister. And Greg's like, oh, yeah, bro. And Greg, I don't know why Greg suddenly Keanu Reeves, but Greg pulls out the photo. And they look at it, but something about this photo isn't, it's not right. Dum, dum, dum! Chapter 7.
So the photo actually shows Michael falling off the stairs, which is weird because they all remember photo first, then the fall. Like they're very clear that they heard the click of the shutter and then Michael's like wail of dismay as he flies backwards, waving his trying to one last bit before he goes. Like,
yeah. Whoa, I bet he fell hilariously, though. I bet it was like a Jim Carrey kind of extra mimage.
Or it's worse. He's just like, I guess I'm about to feel the gravity of the situation, you guys.
He took the fall himself for the laugh because he's a real, he's committed to the bit. He wants attention. He hurt his ankle for the laugh, but he's like, no, for sure. I instigated my fall. I mean, I accidentally fell. After
that's
you
why
took
his limp went away. He's actually good at like pratfalls and stuff. As I tried to be as a child, I was constantly running into walls to look like I had run into the wall. But I was just like, it's easier just to run into the wall.
100%.
And he just was like, oh yeah, I really hurt my ankle. Oh, that was a terrible fall I took.
He's a real Buster Keaton. That's what they always say about Michael. Full of talent, very funny kid. Everyone should love him. And so, yeah, the photo was from before the fall, and they offer up really no explanation. They just move on with their lives.
They keep saying the camera's broken. Over and over through this book, the children are like, camera must be broken. It's taking these stupid pictures. Like
is it? It's taking a picture and spitting a picture out. Like, it's doing what it's supposed to do. I don't know what would be broken about it.
If it was a digital camera, I'd be more willing to believe, like, oh, yeah, they think the camera's broken and, like, oh, it's stuck on some stupid filter or something. Like, modern-day cameras like actually could do this. You could have a digital camera that would, like, oh, yeah, oh, it took you out of the picture. Ha, ha, ha. But with a film camera, I don't understand why the children aren't more impressed with, like, this happening, but... Then we get the typical way. Like, Arlstein's so lucky to write about children because if he wants to end a scene, it's just like, oh, mom's calling.
Boom. Yes. Yes. Kids always have I don't know what you would call it, just like a ripcord out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can just yank a kid out of any scene because mom wanted him out.
Oh, and yeah.
That's a superpower to him.
And also just like, I'm sorry I can't come over. Mom says I can't. Like, they even have a perfect way to be like, this character wants to help, but they can't. What's the reason? Oh, mom says no. Like, that's all they have to do.
Mom said no.
He doesn't have to come up with something like, I have this huge work obligation, so I can't help you fight this demon of Tenthor tomorrow night at midnight. Like, if it's adults. Yes, of course. Yeah. I'll quit my job. Let's do this. Like, that's what I would say. But for a children's book, he has such a ready-made thing to be like, oh, Sherry really wanted to be helpful, but... Dad grounded her because she's a shithead. Like, you know,
so kids, he plays God with these kids. And I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, dang, dude, he doesn't really have to think up much when he's outlining his stories. Whoever needs to be there can be there. And if there's any question about why someone wasn't there, easy. They had to do homework. They were grounded.
And I love that. We're going to come up to it. He's the kid wants to, like, Greg wants to use homework as an excuse. Even at one point, it's just like,
not on a Saturday.
Fine. Yeah. Can't do it on a Saturday. That doesn't make sense. Who kid does the homework on a Saturday? Unless you're going to Greg's on Sunday. But,
that's fair. Well, you know, these kids, Greg's friends, you know, they weren't too bent up, or I don't know what you would say. They weren't too frazzled by Spidey creeping them out, and they're also not too interested in his camera. So Greg goes on home, sees his dad has bought their brand new family station wagon. Got it parked out there nice and neat out in the driveway. Real proud of it, I'm sure Dad is. And Greg, hey, he's got this new camera. Let's take a picture of it. He takes a picture of the new car on his way into the house, runs inside. Mom's calling him for dinner. Gregless. She calls him Gregless. That's his full name, not Gregory. It's like a hybrid of Greg and it's not. Folks, it's Greg. They're having whatever they're having. He finds a place to hide the camera. I thought this was interesting too, that he wouldn't just run in and be like, "Hey, look at this camera I found," you know, as maybe some kids would. He knows they would ask questions. He got it from the story about getting it is a bit thievish, and so he has to go hide the camera. And when I read that in the book, I was like, that is a unique kid's problem. He has to hide this because. Well, they will ask questions.
Unless you're the kind of person who's like, I shouldn't have bought a $500 game console. Let's keep this one at the office for a month or two before I bring it home.
Have you brought that Xbox One home yet? Xbox One S? Xbox XS? What is an Xbox called?
What do you call it now? Xbox Series X.
There you go.
X. I don't know. I'm sticking with the Xbox One. I'm hoping they go with the cloud and I never have to buy another thing again.
All right. Well, all in the cloud. No one asks questions. He hides the camera. But just before he does that, he looks at that photo he just took of that car. Dylan, he just took a picture of a fresh mint Chrysler station wagon parked out front. Oh, that bad boy seats 8. It's got a nice dark blue navy interior. 9 lighters in the thing. I don't know why. We're at the end of the smoking era. Camel Joe's on his way out, or Joe Camel, whatever. But anyway, he takes a picture of this nice station wagon. Oh no. What's up with this picture? Dum dum dum! Chapter 8.
Totaled. The car is wrecked.
What?
Driver's side completely caved in. Terry's head on the dashboard. Is he moving?
What?
Is he alive? Is he mom under the wheel?
Well, it's not that. I'm sorry.
Terry.
I got a little
He's
excited.
He's the strong one.
Who makes... He works for Ben & Jerry's or Carvel or something. He works for an ice cream shop with an E.
Yep. Oh, he does. Yes, he does. He does. But Terry does have a job.
It is the car. Wrecked. He's so just blown away by this that he looks out the window to be like, maybe one side looks good and the other side looks bad. I don't know. He looks out the window. Car's pristine.
Yes.
And Greg does not know what to think, but he's starting to think supernatural. He's getting a bad feeling about this. He's clocking to things
right.
A little quickly. And
where his friends would jump to, the camera is clearly broken. Greg is like, no, God hates us.
Yeah, this is, and Greg is more on the right track. Let's be honest.
Truly. Yeah. Yes, he is. And then at dinner, fucking Dad, so jazzed. I'm going to take everyone for a ride right after they finish eating. Eat up, folks. Eat up. Eat everything. Eat both broccolis. Come on. Eat them up. We're going to go for a ride. Dum, dum, dum.
I can see
Chapter
like the,
9.
I can see the camera just like tight zoom on Greg's face. Just,
Yep.
I think it's funny because this kind of thing happened in my family too, but not. Like I said, we didn't have very exciting car buying moments as usual. Like our grandparents were done with the cars over here. But like new technology were things for the family to come gather around. It's like, here's the cell phone that we got in 1994 that had the pullout antenna.
Was
as big as our yellow phone that we had in the kitchen because everyone had a yellow phone that you have in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It had a case on it. I'm not sure because you could probably get dirt in the giant buttons and everything and actually cause
sure
an issue.
Could.
It was, everyone's very excited. It's like we couldn't use it because the phone call was $100 a pop, but you know, it was
so
there
expensive.
If there was an emergency right there.
Right. Which very rarely did folks have, thank God, but, Greg is worried that his family might in fact have one and he tries to find a way out of this ride. He's like, I promised Michael, I would come over. He's so funny. And I thought I'd come over and laugh at his jokes.
You know why he picked Michael? Because he knew that Michael would always say yes if he said, can I come over right now? And Michael would be like, yeah, come over, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael loves attention. He wants somebody to come laugh at his jokes.
He didn't pick 100%. Bird because he knew Bird would be like, fuck off, and like hang up on him. Yeah. And Sherry is probably just like, let's play truth or dare. And he's like, I'm not into that yet. Give me 2 years.
Give me 2 years. I got to ripen up. I'm still a little, not quite a, I don't know. I'm a green grape. I'm not quite a purple grape.
Greg makes the classic mistake, which is your first excuse didn't work. You have to double down on that excuse. You have to
yeah,
say,
you
like,
can't come up with another one.
Like, if, especially one that's not in any way, shape, or form related to that. Like, what he should have said is like, oh, I'm sorry, but Michael's grandma just died, so like, he's like super devastated. So I got me and not grandma, because they might check and be like, hey, I heard your mom died. Like, you're talking to his mom.
Right. Yeah.
So you got to find that right balance.
Yeah, you do.
But like, immediately switching to, like, he should have started with getting sick. Never use an excuse that depends on another person.
That's what I've always told my kid. But yeah, it doesn't work. His parents don't care. I don't care if you don't feel good, Gregless. Get in this car, you're coming. And Greg, you know, he has to give in. Most of the protagonists in these books are a little bit weak-willed because they have to be convinced to do something. And so he does go with his family. And
what?
What
drives me insane, thinking about this now, is what is the one thing none of these kids ever have is, like, some sort of photographic evidence that something is weird. He has a picture of the car. He could literally grab the camera and be like, snap, 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 like, take pictures of it and keep handing them photos and be like, something weird, right? Like, cameras can't do this, right? Dad will probably be like, it's broken. Let's get in the new station wagon.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
Dad just spent
$30,000,
$30,000. He's not going to believe a camera's cursed them to die in a car accident.
Arnold Stein's making the assumption that Greg is worried more about getting caught with the camera than he is about his entire family dying.
To be fair, the only thing that's happened so far is Michael took a tumble and faked having an ankle injury. So, like, he doesn't have a lot to go off of except, like...
Well, I mean, he does have the picture of the car.
And that's true.
But you know what he could do? He doesn't have to reveal the camera. He could just take the picture and be like, hey, I found this picture near the car. This seems like a weird omen.
No, you just see, you started off with a weak explanation for something. They're going to be like, what do you mean you found this with the car? Then you'll have to fess up like, no, I actually have this camera that I took it with. And they're like, where'd you get a camera from? Now he's in trouble for breaking into the house. You fucked up.
Or just leave the pictures of the car in the driver's seat. And then when Dad gets in, he's like, what is this picture? Is this our car? All totaled? Did I not check the fucking Carfax?
Yeah,
has this thing been refurbished?
He would think it's just a different station wagon, and they have to see the pictures being taken.
It's in his fucking driveway. This is tough. It's a tough call
this
for
is
Greg.
The part
either
where
way,
we finally split. Like, this is what really just we finally both lose it, and I'm just like, no, this is the splitting point for us.
Well, the way that this is going to end up working, Greg eventually just has to get in the car with his family that's about to die with him in it, in the car. because he doesn't want to explain to them about why he doesn't want to get in there. So he's going to get in there and die without warning. They go out to the car. Dum, dum, dum. Chapter 10. Here we go. What's going to happen?
I feel like R.L. Stein was 100% watched Christmas Vacation right before he wrote this book, because he's literally describing Carl Griswold driving down the highway like a maniac and nearly dying under that log truck.
Yeah.
Not exactly, but it's station wagon,
bad, kind of an aloof dad.
Yeah.
Caught in his head, wants just love in this wagon.
But he's like, I'm just, I need to crank it up a bit. I'm like, it's getting aggressive. He gets up to like 85 miles per hour in his brand new wagon. It's a little aggressive. He's changing lanes. He's getting things like, he's already in a different world in his head. He doesn't have a family anymore. He's on a race car track. He's, you know, showing off for all the people in the stands. Terry is just like, do it, Dad. Drive. Everyone's getting super excited. Greg feels like he's going to barf. I know how Greg feels. I've nearly killed the family before with secret knowledge that I should have shared. But, like, sometimes you can't. Sometimes you can't. And they're about to rear-end a pickup at 90 miles per hour on the freeway, highway, wherever you want to call it. And Greg screams with that prepubescent boy sound that shatters glass. Like, it is just... Dad probably, like, slammed on the brakes without even knowing why. Because that scream just pierced the reptile part of his brain. Dun, dun, dun!
So, they do manage to convince Dad, hey, let's take this thing back home. Let's go put this horse back in the stable, Pa. You've done ran her ragged.
Because he couldn't find the headlights.
He could not find how to turn on the headlamps. Mom was getting a little nervous. Typically, or that big wand that juts out of the side of a station wagon steering column. Either way, they get him to go back home. He calms her down, takes him back home. Greg, happy to be alive. Maybe he thinks he's thwarted the curse of the camera. So up in his room, he takes a look at the camera again and that car pic, and he's like, God damn, this is weird. This is weird. So he's like, you know what I'm going to do with this camera? I'm going to do a little bit more experimentation. I'm going to take a photo of myself in the mirror, but the flash ruins it. Flashes on cameras always making things too bright and glary. So he's like, hey, Terry! What were you going to say? You look upset.
No. I'm sorry you stopped. What's funny is, so does it ever talk about, like, because he took a picture of the camera itself, and I'm sure the camera won't work on itself, so that's why the picture was actually ruined. Because Spidey does say, like, you can't destroy the camera, and I bet that's one of the things, is, like, you can't curse the camera with itself.
Interesting. Maybe. But good point.
The other thing I was going to point out is, Greg doesn't know if the camera's cursed or if it tells the future and just shows bad things about the future. So he thinks there's a possibility for him that, like, oh, we avoided the car accident, so we're good. Like, maybe this just predicts the future and you can change it or whatever and doesn't cause bad things to happen. But he should have thought about the fact that the picture showed rear side collision or driver's side collision, and they were about to rear end that pickup truck.
Entirely
different accident. We'll save that for later, I guess. But then he decides to kill his brother.
Terry, get in here so I can fucking murder you with this camera. So, yes, he asks Terry, poor Terry, gullible Terry. Terry's probably in his own bedroom flexing in front of his mirror like, oh, yeah, who's a strong Terry? That's me. Then he goes, yeah, I'll pose for a picture. Greg, trying to cover every base, is like, yeah, I got this camera. Sherry loaned it to me. You know Sherry, right? My best friend Sherry. You know how she likes all the cameras all the time. She loaned me a camera. So Terry's like, yeah, whatever, dude. Whatever, little brother. So Terry crosses his eyes, sticks out his tongue for the pic, being a goof. And Greg says, Doug does the snap, goes to see it develop. Terry, get out of here. I gotta look at this picture I took of you and take it back to my room by myself. Don't ask why I'm being weird right now. I'm gonna take your picture with me. You go away. But in the picture, Terry looks frightened and in the woods. Now, we just took a picture in a house. How is Terry in the woods? He didn't look frightened. He had his eyes crossed and had his tongue stuck out. And there looks to be like a playground and a house behind him. Greg's like, that is not what just happened. This camera is broken.
I'm going to say again that if I feel like if you or I were in these books, the books would play out very differently for a couple reasons. I would be doing experiments with the camera on inanimate objects of small sizes. Like, you don't go from, like, family car wreck, to brother. Like, who does that progression? You don't go to human trials after a catastrophic failure. Like, what are you doing? He's insane.
Yeah. Take, like, a picture of something mundane.
A plant. Let's take a picture of a rose bush. Oh, no, it's dead. At least it's not your brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Or, like,
I'm with you
get
there,
a
man.
Hamster, if the camera needs, like, souls, like, just, you know, work your way up the ladder towards your
get
brother.
Get some bugs, insects. I don't know if I would have started a hamster, to be honest with you. I might have gone with bugs.
I'll always start with hamsters. But, like, it's just like, don't like, I wouldn't even have family members as candidates for a human trial. That's just me.
No, I'm with you there. And this chapter is a long one because we go from there until the next day. We're at Bird's Little League game, Bird being the tall, lanky athlete that he is. And Bird's got good friends. You know, my friends never came, the friends of mine that didn't play sports never came to watch me play sports. But Greg meets up with Sherry to go see Bird play. He brings the camera along and he's like, hey, I brought this camera. It's broken. Let me tell you what happened. It's broken. I took a picture of Terry last night and frickin' didn't work right. And Sherry's like, well, I don't care what you just said. Give me that camera. I want to take a picture of our big old friend Bird taking it in a bat during the game. And then he's like, I don't know about that. But then Bird shows up on the bleachers before the game started. We've been clowning around on the bleachers there. And Bird shows up to the bleachers with them, and he's like, they're arguing about sharing the camera. Greg's a little possessive of it. And Bird's like, well, you just go ahead and take my picture before he heads out to play. So he poses, and he takes a picture of Bird before he's on his way out to the baseball game. Hasn't started playing yet. Take a picture of him. And watch this whole thing develop here. I mean, you probably do the you flap in the air a little bit, shake it like a Polaroid picture. Yeah. Shake it. And in that picture, Dylan, what is in that picture?
It's Bird looking like maybe he has a broken neck. Like his head is at an unnatural angle as he lies on the field. And that's concerning, especially for a tall, lanky guy. Like that image is,
yeah.
You know, Doug Jones, that actor who plays like tall, bendy people, like in Pan's Labyrinth. And you have not. Yeah, okay. But anyway,
no, I'm just being
there
agreeable.
Are such people. Yeah. So that just seemed like all contorted.
Yeah. It's gruesome. It's a gruesome image to get.
It's gruesome. Yeah, yeah.
For a kid, like a kid broke his neck.
But they kind of, you know, they laugh it off as children do with their cursed cameras. that's you know, that's our cliffhanger. I'm sorry, I did
dum-dum-dum.
Dum-dum-dum. Yeah. Sorry, I got really worked up thinking of a dead child. I'm going to have to, edit
continue. Continue on, then. Continue on while you're worked up.
Oh, I mean, we're also talking about baseball, so, I mean, just, it's...
Oh, I know. I'm with you there, bud.
But, so Sherry's just, finally someone is showing some common sense. It's like, let's take a look. Oh, is it an icon, like a cannon? What could we get for this if we take it down to the pawn shop? So Sherry's looking it over, but she doesn't see any identifying marks. There's no brand name on there. Nothing that says, like, oh, made in hell, or, you know. There's no way to open it, which is weird, because all cameras need some way to add a way to take pictures with it, even our day and age without film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an unlockable, unopenable puzzle box. But, they're also 12, so their attempts to open a camera, I'm sure, are like, with their tiny child strength.
I can't get it. Do you have long fingernails? I don't. No, I clipped mine yesterday. Well, use a stick. My dad could probably get in there.
I think we can get into his toolbox. So they look and see Bird just lying on the ground. Unconscious. With his head bent at an awkward angle. And still.
Oh, no.
Bum, bum, bum!
Oh, God. They run
probably
to
can't
him,
do
but...
that again before my wife yells at me, so...
You just cliffhangered my cliffhanger. They run to him because they're like, oh, not Bird. He was just goofing. Friggin' goofing, this Bird. Ugh. Man.
Oh, Bird.
And they want to beat him up. I think Greg's first instinct is to pulverize Bird into just bird mush.
Yeah, he pulls him up off the ground and like pins his arms behind his back. And he's like, all right, Sherry, you want to take turns hitting him and I'll hold him? And she's like... Let's do it. We'll break his knees first so he can't get away. And Bird's like, just goofing, guys. Let me go. Guys.
Yeah. They were going to go straight mafia boss on his kneecaps, which he needs to play Little League. You have to have kneecaps. It's in the rule book. Mm-hmm. So Bird is like, man, just chill out, dude. That camera just broken. Get your bingo cards back out. We've said broken 15 times about this camera. It's just broken. And then they're like, ah, that silly Bird. He's not as funny as Michael, but he is a good time. So they go back to their seats. Gameplay resumes. And then Sherry wants to leave. She's like, you know what? It's hot outside. Bird's team, the friggin' Dolphins. He plays for the Dolphins, the little league team, the Dolphins. They're losing. It's hot. Camera sucks. I didn't get any pictures of him batting. I'm done. But Greg, being a good friend, he's like, I want to watch Bird bat one more time. Come on.
Is the Dolphins a stupid name for a baseball team? Like, they make a point about that, but it's just like, I mean, is that any weirder than having a team called the Marlins? Like,
it's... No, it's not at all. There's a team called the A's.
Yeah. And they have an elephant. An elephant as their mascot. Like, let's
makes
tie this.
No, it's so dumb. The Athletics.
Also,
that
my
is
little,
the worst.
My little league team was called the Blue Jays, and we had puke green uniforms. So you stick those two things together, and you see a winning team.
That makes no sense. I think
no,
they
that
ran
doesn't
out of good
actually
dye.
Make sense. Yeah, that, no, it's just the only team name left was Blue Jays, and the only team color left was green.
Wow, man!
Yeah.
You'd think they would have drawn that up a little bit better. You'd think.
Yeah.
Well, Greg does want to watch Bird bat again, so they stay for the next inning.
They want to.
Oh,
boo
they do
him
want to boo him
specifically
before
and they
being
do.
A jerk.
Yeah.
Oh, I would boo him. I'm also kind of upset that he pulled that bit of a shenanigan earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's frightening. But he hits a single. Ding! Hits a single, gets to first base. Next batter up. The next batter is actually a very young Albert Pujols. A lot of people don't realize that, but it is Albert Pujols up to bat next. And he hits a line drive into the side of Bird's friggin' noggin as he's running to second base. Fuck! That had to hurt.
So I'm picturing, and I don't know why, I always picture line drives going right down the middle between the bases, because that's how that works, scientifically speaking. So I'm thinking, like, Bird must have had a good lead off that bag to get hit by a line drive as he's running to the base. Like, I feel like by the time a runner gets to a point, like, it must have been, like, real close to the first base then.
Maybe, yeah, maybe it split the difference heading toward that second baseman.
I don't know. I'd need to see like a replay of this. Can we spend the next hour talking about a little league game?
Sure. You know, and I'm going to read and describe what just happened here. This is the end of chapter 13, which is your favorite chapter, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Every time.
The batter hit the next ball hard. It made a loud thunk as it left the bat. A dozen people, players and spectators, cried out as the ball flew across the diamond, a sharp line drive, and slammed into the side of Bird's head with another thunk. Greg watched in horror as the ball bounced off Bird and dribbled away into the infield grass. Bird's eyes went wide with disbelief, confusion. He stood frozen in place on the base path for a long moment. Then, both of his hands shot up above his head, which is kind of comical to me. This is how he falls. Ah! Then both of his hands shot up above his head, and he uttered a shrill cry, long and loud, like the high-pitched whinny of a horse. His eyes rolled up in his head. He sank to his knees, uttered another cry, softer this time, then collapsed, sprawling onto his back, his neck at an unnatural angle, his eyes closed. He didn't move. Now, Dylan, for the audience, I'd love for you to do the audio reenactment of that scene.
So it was a sharp cry, then a softer cry, and a horse-like cry, correct?
A shrill cry, long and loud, like the high-pitched whinny of a horse.
Okay. Yeah.
Funk.
So, like, if you take away the sound, like, if you think about, like, actually watching that happen, I feel like this is actually kind of, like, would be disturbing to see in real life. Like, seeing that, like seeing, like, someone just get, like, rocketed in the head and just, like, just the sound. I can hear that sound because I got hit on the collarbone, like, 2 months ago by a softball. And apparently it's a very loud noise to get hurt by a ball. But, The whinnying sound, though. All right.
Okay, I'm gonna here's the at-bat. All right, there seems to be a fastball pitch down the middle. It's a swing. Funk! Funk! Nice. I like it. And for those of you at home,
that was the second.
There's That was the second cry. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut that one off. Dylan did, he did the whole visual. Threw his hands up, did a soft, or I'm sorry, a high-pitched whinny and a soft shrill cry. You nailed it, bud.
We might have to do a video podcast at some point because the audience is missing out on a lot of my gestures and expressions.
Dude, yeah.
You look horrified at some points. Like, you can't bear to see it. And other times...
Mostly, I'm worried that you're just head-banging into your own microphone.
No, you notice I haven't moved so much because I've taken my feet off the floor, so I have no way to actually move the chair around. So, there you go, buddy. I did that for you. I sit differently now.
You cut your own legs off at the shins for this podcast, and I appreciate it. I'm here for it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that ended on a dumb because Bird, well, he might be dead. This is real life. Oh, yeah. This isn't Bird's not going to come back. This isn't a pose. This isn't a picture. We see Bird actually take a pretty big hit.
So everyone just rushes onto the field, going around like Bird, trying to see what's going on. Sherry runs after him. Greg starts to go too, because even though he's mad at Bird, he doesn't want him to die. But and he hears Terry calling him, and he turns around, and like Terry's like out of breath. He clearly like ran here. He looks scared, and Greg realizes that he recognizes the expression on Terry's face and knows that that's what he saw in the picture, and what he sees behind Terry is now the background that matches picture. And Terry tells Greg that Dad was in a bad car accident. Car's total, man. Brand new station wagon. It's total.
Oh, not the brand new one.
Mom said it's insured, though. Mom said it's insured.
Man, if it were my dad, I'd be like, wait, did he wreck the rusty one or the shiny one? Oh, the shiny one? God dang. That was the best one. But no, chapter 13 and 14 are rough. It's a rough patch because we have Greg's good friend Bird has potentially broken his neck. And then before he can even go check on his friend, his brother runs out from nowhere and says, hey, Dad might also be dying, which sucks. So Greg looks back toward Bird. He's like, well, hate to not go check on my friend, but I got bigger fish to fry. And then he sees... You would think that would have been the dumb, getting that info from Terry, but no, this goes on. He sees a shadowy figure lurking behind the bleachers. Is that Spidey? Dumb. Chapter 15, Dylan.
As far as cliffhangers go, this one actually it's kind of dark, because the way that Stein starts the next chapter, he does this really cool thing where Greg's walking through the hospital and he can't focus on anything. So all he sees are like the colors, really, of like he's walking past like the section of the hospital, and it's all these like browns and like the children's sections that way, and it's these greens and purple. Like, and it's only like when he gets to the hospital room and sees his mom that like he's able to like focus on
him. Yeah. Something else. Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's a really good point. That is a really good observation. No, you're 100% right. And it turns out he's okay. I like how they do sum up. He's like, he's okay. It's just a few broken bones. Like, bones are important. That's he's okay. He's just a head now.
You said that as if to tell the audience, bones are important. Like,
he's just kind of like, yeah, he's okay. He's just a few broken bones. I'd be like, well, which ones? Like, some of them matter more than others. I need to know. But Greg wants to tell him about the photo. He's like, oh, shit, Dad, about your near-death experience. I might have known about that. But before he can leak any of that out, he's interrupted. And somebody, you know, they're all talking to him. Nurses are coming in. The family's there. And he decides, well, maybe I won't. I don't really. Maybe this is all silly. So he decides not to. Dad falls asleep. Turns out, though, some guy ran a red light, hit the side, as you pointed out, Dylan. That's what the picture showed. Wasn't a rear-end collision or a forward-facing collision into the rear end of a truck. It was a side collision. The guy claimed that his brakes had failed, and when he ran into Greg's dad, and on the way out of the hospital, Greg wonders a point that you made earlier: is this camera showing the future or causing it? And we just kind of leave off there. It's not much of a cliffhanger, but dumb, all the same. Chapter 16.
Now we find out which of Greg's friends is the worst one. And it's Sherry. Sherry redeems herself by the end. But right now, it is Sherry's birthday, and Sherry is one of those children that wants you to know it, unlike other children who are normal and quiet about it. Or did other children like their birthdays? I'm not.
I'm huge into my birthday, but only after I turned like 22, when I could convince people to come over to my birthdays because I had alcohol. Yeah. Prior to that, no one really wanted anything to do with them, but I was into them. Yeah.
And you know he wasn't wearing a helmet. Little League didn't have batting helmets then, like that. And he got it like he probably has a space. Like if he wanted to like fly on the ground, he could store a baseball, you know, just sit on his head in the dent that he has there now. But he's fine. Bird's fine. Sherry wants to know.
Fine.
Sherry wants to know if Greg can bring the broken camera to her birthday because she wants to take pictures of all of her friends. She's basically a Typhoid Mary with a camera. Is she just wants to infect everyone at her birthday party with a doom curse because she thinks it's going to be fun to see the crazy weird cameras.
Pictures. Yes.
Not cameras, pictures.
Pictures, yeah. And yeah, she thinks that'll be cool.
And, but so he's like, I'm really freaked out about the camera. I don't want to bring it. I can't, like, I'm having dreams about it. And he starts telling her about this dream that he had with her. And this is, I think,
yeah, perhaps, yeah. Greg swallowed hard. And I had a dream last night, Sherry. Huh? What kind of dream? Sherry asked impatiently. It was about the camera. I was taking everyone's picture, my whole family, Mom, Dad, and Terry. They were barbecuing in the backyard. I held up the camera. I kept saying, say cheese, over and over. And when I looked through the viewfinder, they were smiling back at me, but they were skeletons, all of them. Their skin was gone, and Greg's voice trailed off. What a dumb dream, Sherry said, laughing.
Got him.
Yep. Dum dum dum.
Where they're just like, we all went into that house, so it belongs to all of us. It's like, no, it doesn't. Yeah, no. GTFO. Like, I found the camera, my camera. Like, what is this?
Right.
The camera? You got a feather boa. I got a camera.
He got a torn ankle. You got a boa. Chapter 17. Bird is at the party. Bird, this is where Bird barely pulls ahead of Michael in terms of how funny they are. Now, Michael, still to me, the number one. But Bird says, he jokes that since he got hit with the baseball, he now clucks like a chicken sometimes, which is funny. And Sherry wants everyone to have their pic taken with the camera for fun, as you mentioned. But the pic that Greg takes of her near the tree out in her yard doesn't show her at all. And she's like, well, I was in the picture. Do you just not know how to use the camera? Is it broken? Ugh, stupid camera. She gets impatient, gives up, leaves him.
So they're going to play Truth or Dare. I've never played Truth or Dare.
Really? Wait, Truth or Dare?
Never.
No, I'm asking you, Truth or Dare?
Oh. Truth.
Have you ever played Truth or Dare? I don't know. I think I broke the game.
You broke the game.
But so they decided to go into the woods for some privacy to play truth or dare, and the three boys.
It is funny because I see you. I feel like you wrote this out in a very specific way. You're like three boys and nine girls go off in the woods to play truth or dare, and Greg dreads it.
You know, I was thinking about this too, because I was like, you know, I kind of get that, because now there's a level of expectation and you're around other people. Like, I'm more of a, let's not do it in a crowd of 12 people. Let me just get you alone and try to get you to like me and then maybe put my moves on you in a more authentic way. I don't want to be forced into it by chance out in the middle of the woods. If we're talking about, like, harmless kissing or whatever these kids are going to do. Yeah.
Greg, your turn. Like they've played before, and it's actually pretty sadistic. Jerry is not a nice person. Jerry's mom is just like, hey, get out of the woods, time for birthday cake, and please God don't be any of you be pregnant. Come on. they're putting their pants back on, they're just like
It's her friggin' birthday. Is she goofing? Dum dum dum. She's not goofing. It does.
Like, this is again like one of those moments where like reading as adults, like, oh my god, her parents are like, is she being tortured in some basement somewhere? Like,
oh my god, I know. I know. You and I know enough about true crime to know that this isn't a far-fledged idea that a group of, or like one kid could be snatched away from a big group and no one know. It's a thing that happens. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, so it's a legit scare in the book for me. And that might be why I like this one, because this was a book where I was like, oh no, I hope that, I mean, I know she's fine because of the nature of these books, but that's a real scare. So anyway, they can't find Sherry, and it's not Greg's going to handle this and the kids are going to figure this out. No, they call the police. We finally get some police into a Goosebumps book, because there is a missing child, and the parents, they don't go into how the parents are upset, but I'm sure that there are pieces. Greg lives next door, so he actually hangs around at Sherry's house for a bit, and he's torn up. He's got this internal struggle about, should I say anything about the camera? At this point, he's got enough evidence to think, like, there's something going on. We just took a picture of her near a tree, and she wasn't in that picture. She was missing from the picture. She's missing now. There's the car accident. He's got all this stuff. And an officer sees him and is going to ask him questions like, hey, you were out in the woods with her. What was the last thing you saw? Did you see something? What's going on? You know, he saw that something was bothering Greg. And Greg, he does it. He does what we've been wanting the kids to do this whole time. He tells an adult, I got this camera. He does a little...
Worst time.
Yeah.
The truck would have been perfect, like, before the car was wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
Have a picture of the wreck. What does he have a picture of now? I took a picture
a tree.
Of Sherry and look.
Exactly. Son, that's a picture of a tree. Yeah, but Sherry was in the picture. She doesn't appear to be. It looks like a picture of an old willow tree out in the middle of the yard. And the cop just looks at him like, ah, oh, this poor kid's all to pieces. Probably his friend's gone missing. He's just trying to help, and he's probably going to get held back a couple grades, this poor kid. So now Greg is worried now about what the cop might do, which the cop's not going to do anything, but Greg's like, am I going to go to jail for being dumb and taking pictures of trees? Dum dum dum. Chapter 19.
The cop, just get out of here, kid. Just go home.
Beat it.
We understand. Just go home. So he goes back home, but mom and dad are out. Mom, dad's in the hospital, and Terry's working, making soft
soft served with an ice cream scoop for you on a podcast. Like,
I mean, I appreciated it. It's okay. It's all. It seemed like a big cone.
And mom's at the hospital because she's got nothing better to do apparently than see dad.
Jeez. Okay.
But Greg finds his room's a mess, and to be honest, that does not warrant dum 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 because that would have been my room any day of the week. I would not have noticed if homeless men had searched my room. No one would have noticed. They've been like, oh, it is a tornado.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, and I was like, it doesn't, I mean, I'm sure the cops, if this were a legit case, the cops would have probably searched the neighboring house too, if with one of the kids being there, as a bit of, oh, you know these people? Well, then maybe she's hiding in there, playing a goof, let's go check this house, maybe they rummage through. But Greg is immediately like, maybe you're right there. Maybe you're right there, Dylan.
And a scrupulous cop could do a search. Greg let me in and got the drugs.
But, you know, a scrupulous cop might have been like, well, you know, since a kid's gone missing, maybe we don't send the neighbor kid to his house without his parents.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
There's a lot of weird stuff going on.
He got his kid.
He's only got two arms. What do you think he's gonna be carrying a bunch of 12-year-olds with his hands full? Hey, don't mind me. Well, Greg immediately is like, oh, I bet it was Spidey, which seems like a leap. Dum dum dum. Chapter 20. This is just a thought experiment. He's like, I bet it was Spidey wanting that camera back. Oh. And I bet Spidey was the dark figure at the ball game. This is just R.L. Stine's chance to catch everybody up. Be like, just so you know, guys, Spidey's still around and bad. And the girl that went missing was probably taken by Spidey. Dum, 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 chapter 21. We're flying now. We're cruising.
Well, Greg knows he's got to do something now. Like, they got to go back to the house. They got to get rid of this stupid kid. They got to do something. Like, they have to do something. So he calls Bird, and he's like, you need to call Michael. We're going to meet at the playground. Let's go. He books it from his house, but as he leaves, he notices what apparently was the most tragic thing in this book for Travis, because of the frowny face emoji next to it, which was not next to the disappearance of Sherry, or the tragic falling of Michael, or Bird nearly dying from a brain aneurysm induced by a baseball moving at 90 miles per hour towards his head. No, Travis was saddened by the uneaten birthday cake still sitting on the picnic table.
That is sad. It made me think of my little kid, and like, you know, they were parents. They were excited to celebrate her birthday. They rushed everyone in from the woods to cut this cake for her birthday. And that was when horror struck and no one got birthday cake. And they didn't, in their fit of trying to figure out what was going on, they left the birthday cake. They ignored it, and it just sat there. And it just sits there waiting for a little girl to come eat her birthday cake. And it sits there uneaten. Partially cut. They didn't even get through all the slices. Dylan, that's super sad. The uneaten birthday cake is a symbol of a missing girl.
All right, I take it back. I take it back. There is something kind of haunting about like seeing something like that left, like that's the right center of. Yeah, that's true.
I'm about to tear up just thinking about it. Dump, dump, dump. Chapter 22.
So Greg, he meets with Bird and Michael, and Michael Bird, and who's Brad Bird, is the director of Pixar Films, not Michael Bird. I was hoping work something in there. That was entirely pointless. I'm sorry. I will leave this in. So okay. He's talking to Bird and Michael. Such a sad face. So Greg tries to convince Bird and Michael after the meet at the baseball field. That they need to take the camera back to the Kaufman house. Like, we need to get rid of it. It's bad news. Look what's happened. Like, you guys have to admit the Sherry thing, the car thing, the Michael thing, the you thing. Bad news. They still don't seem on board with the fact that it's cursed yet. And then they're just like, just throw it away. Like, just leave it here. And he's like, no, 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 no. Like, Spidey is, like, harassing me. And the whole time that I was thinking is like, do you want to leave something out in the wild that can do that?
Yeah.
Like, what if someone takes your picture? Like, because you left it on the thing. You live in a small town. Dave, who works in the corner grocery, is going to find it, and he's going to take a picture of you one day, and you're going to get eaten by wolverines. But the Bird's trying to take it away from Greg, and they start tussling over it. And It's like two people fighting over a loaded gun, and it goes off.
Mm.
And it snaps a picture of Greg. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, God. And, man, in this world that R.L. Stein lives in, that we live in with him, bullies travel in packs of two. And we get two bullies show up. We got Joey and Mickey. Joey and Mickey, hey! They step up. They steal the camera from Greg, start teasing the kids. And Michael, freaking hilarious, Michael says, just let them keep it. Fuck them. but Greg, he's like, no, 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 man, they should give it back. That camera's got some real power. And to Dylan's point earlier, sure, it does. We should probably get it back. So Greg bravely, which bravery is not the hallmark of many of the protagonists that R.L. Stein has in these books until certain moments. Greg does. He finally, his bravery comes in. He snatches the camera from Mickey, and they all take off running, just hoofing it. And then they turn back about 20 minutes later and realize the bullies weren't even, they didn't even start chasing them. They're just laughing. Bullies are like that. They're a little bit lazy when the prey starts to run.
Works smarter, not harder, right? Like, they're That's terrorized, they say. Ran, and you didn't even have to do anything. Like, just some mild, whoa. Listen, if you're bullying a child, especially as a 37-year-old man, you have to take into account that they're sprightly little fuckers, so.
They are.
There's a lot I'm not going to leave in this episode, because I sound like a child murderer for some reason through the whole thing, and I can't stop doing it.
cut it out.
And I look crazy, too.
You do look a little bit crazy. Well, Bird and Michael, you know, the bullies didn't chase them, so Bird and Michael, they're like, well, we got home scot-free on that. We're not stuck with the camera or bullies. We got to get home to dinner. Greg, sorry, you're still stuck with it. And they won't commit to Greg's question if they'll go with him the next day to the Kaufman house to get rid of this camera. They're like, you know, maybe. You know, I got, you know, Bird's got Little League, and I got some more jokes I got to write for my stand-up career. I don't know if we'll be able to make it, Greg. Good luck to you, bud.
And, not great friends. These might be the worst two friends in the book. Well, Diane was kind of an asshole, too.
Oh, yeah. And I will go ahead and tell you, in the next book, the companion is awful. So by comparison, Bird and Michael are just kind of they're in the middle. They're just a
Are we talking about Larry Bird and Michael Jordan? Is that what we're talking about right now?
Ah, do you think that was
This is right around the time that they were big.
How did we not put that together until now?
Because it was only when I started doing Brad Bird, and then ever since then you've been saying Bird Michael, and it's just like Bird Mike.
I bet it is. I bet this is a Larry Bird Michael Jordan reference.
Well,
because
I was looking at the kids' names too, and it's just like it sounds like he's doing a thing with their names too. Like their names aren't Greg Banks, like Doug. Like those are. I don't know. I can't tell. Like, sometimes if he's trying to sneak something in there, but he is a sports guy. He does like the sports. So, although I think he's more of a football fan. Anyway.
Well, Bird and Michael makes sense. So, Greg gets all the way back to his driveway before being like, oh, shit. Right before the Mickey and Joey showed up in my tussle, there was an errant snapshot of me that was taken that I shoved into my back pocket. I should give that a peek. I should see what's in that picture. I'd be afraid to look at it personally, Dylan, but he does take a glance, and he cannot believe what he sees. Dum, dum, dum. Chapter 24.
I like this. I like this because most of the time, it's someone looking scared at the camera. Meh. Like, you know, after a certain while, like, we get it. It's scary. So, like, he looks at the camera again, and he's like, there's me looking terrified at something. But next to him is Sherry. But Sherry's gone.
Yeah.
So how's Sherry in the picture? But then he gets a call from Mom, as the kids in these books often do, and goes inside, but he still doesn't know what's going on. And Mom has a talk with him because, like, his best friend next door was just snatched by a child murderer, so she's probably a little concerned about how he's doing and also the situation in their neighborhood.
Sure, yeah.
But, so a couple days go by. Dad's gonna be coming from the hospital. Sherry's definitely buried by the side of some major highway. a nameless Maybe. Grave.
Don't make me laugh at that, you evil man. But no, you're right. That would be my fear.
And that, honestly, that is most likely what, like, everyone's thinking in the book, except mm-hmm. for Greg, who's like, that evil camera. Meanwhile, the cop's like, kid, I wish I lived in your world where I thought magic cameras killed children. Like, that's probably what the cop is really thinking. He's like, I miss your innocence, child. But, so, Michael Jordan and Larry Bird are just, like, over the whole Kaufman thing. They're like, we're not going to the house with you. Just, it's ridiculous. Like, I'm not doing that. Like, we could, like, we don't even care. We don't care about the camera. We don't care about you as a human being. And we don't really even believe that the camera's dangerous, so bye. But Greg decides to hold on to the camera because now that Sherry's back, maybe that's...
Yeah.
Maybe it brings people back, too. And then he just shreds up the pictures.
Yeah.
Just tears them up.
Now that Sherry is literally back in the picture, he thinks, maybe it's worth hanging on to this thing. But then, and I want to double back on something. It's been 2 days, and I want to point out that Bird, Michael, and Greg were all able to get out of their homes and go meet each other at a playground. While their best friend is missing, do they not have parents that say, don't go out alone at night?
And
stop
also,
doing that.
That wasn't even 2 days after Sherry left. That was the same day that Sherry disappeared. Those three snuck out of the house and went to the playground where the two bullies were. Same day. And their parents were like, oh, yeah. Well, Greg was alone because his mom was at the hospital.
Right, right. I mean, I know it's in those cases, like, lightning is unlikely to strike twice in such close succession. But, I mean, still, come on.
Play it safe.
Take care of your youth. Anyway, the phone rings. Okay, we've just ripped up pictures of all the pictures and stuff, and then the phone rings, and Greg answers it. Who is it?
Well, it's Sherry.
Oh, it's what? Sherry's on the phone? Sherry's on the horn. Dum dum dum. 25.
So we get a little bit of a time skip. Sherry's been back for 2 hours, and she doesn't remember a single thing. Just 2 days of her life are gone. She was there and then she wasn't. But Sherry has to go because the cops are just like, we want to talk to you about your strange disappearance and where'd you go? Who, like, what happened? And her life is going to be a nightmare for years to come because of this small little incident where she disappeared for 2 days is going to lead to 5 years of, like, therapy and questions.
Yeah.
And, like,
and we never really get any answers as to where she was in that stasis period.
Nope. Just, well, we kind of get a hint, but it is very vague and doesn't really tell you anything. And that's later. Mm. That's later. But they decide to meet again at the playground next to the bleachers. And she's like, Sherry's tired. She's been, her, like, after the cops finished questioning her, her parents started questioning her. I'm sure her parents are just like, all right, I know you can't talk to the cops about everything because we've got the weed plants in the backyard and everything. So, but really, what happened to you? Like, where'd you go? She's like, Mom, it disappeared. But.
And oddly, her parents let her, again, go hang out at the,
well,
in the,
the
at
next
the playground.
Day. It's the
I mean,
next
she's back.
Day.
Wouldn't you want to, like, hug her, keep her at home for a couple of days, let her relax?
Ground her? Because at this point, you're thinking, like, what did you do? Like, where were you in the attic this whole time? In that trunk that you like to hide in and sometimes you fall asleep in? Like, and then we're too embarrassed, so you didn't come downstairs, and then it was 2 days later?
Maybe. It's weird.
But, so, he's like, Sherry, this camera's evil. And for once, one of his friends actually believes him. And she was in the least danger, it seems like. Because apparently he can just rip up her pictures and she's fine. It's not like you can unbump Bird's head by tearing up his pictures. Like,
right. That's a good point.
I see a tall, thin, sinister, shadowy figure lurking towards them. Spidey's back. And he's there for blood.
Oh.
Or the camera. I think the camera.
Oh, the camera. Dum, dum, dum. Well, at the sight of Spidey, they run. Sherry and Greg start hoofing it, and Spidey chases him. And he starts to close the gap. I mean, he's a spindly guy. He's described as having long legs, tall, thin fella. 50 or 60, so I mean, he's no Carl Lewis, but he's booking it. He's keeping up with these kids. High-stepping it like Forrest Gump, I imagine. Good form. They cross the street and they're cut off by one of their neighbors who's driving home. It's old Jerry Norman. God love him, Jerry Norman. Used to be the youth pastor down there, worked at the Walgreens at the corner market there for a couple of years. Sweet, sweet guy. Kids love him. Everybody loves him. And he tells Spidey to knock it off. He says, hey, stop chasing and trying to kidnap all these gosh dang kids right here, Spidey. Get on out of here. Which seems like a pretty light way to handle someone who's chasing a kid that was just kidnapped. But, you know, it's a weird neighborhood. And mm-hmm. Jerry asks the kids for some reason. He's like, hey, kids, you seem to be scared to death of being chased by a guy who looks like he wants to kill you. Should I call the police? I'm new on Earth. Should I call police about this, or do I call a restaurant? Which one?
He just wants to check with them to see if they want to press charges first. He's like, I don't think that's the situation. I think this is you get the cops involved regardless. instead yeah. of being like, well, Jerry's just like, hey, listen, I'm sure he's got a couple problems, so listen, don't worry about it. Listen, I got a
Jerry's
couple
like,
boys
I'm sick
of
the police. But anyway, the kids say no. No, don't go. Don't call the police. We're fine continuing to run for our lives. Don't worry about it. And Jerry's like, are you sure? And they're like, yeah. No, this is fine. We're terrified. He's like, all right. And then he speeds away. I mean, and Jerry even says he had seen. They have a whole conversation right now somehow. But Jerry even tells them that he had seen Spidey around the neighborhood. And he's like, I just thought it was harmless. And it's like, does this town not have newspapers? This girl was missing. If you see a curious character around the town, you give somebody a call.
Yeah, they didn't have and maybe horror movies have made me think this happens more often than it actually does, but they didn't get the whole town together roaming through the woods with flashlights, looking for Sherry. Like, everyone in the town should know that Sherry's missing because they all spent the last 2 days in the Briars looking for her, and now everyone's really mad that she's just back again.
It's weird. It's weird how it didn't seem like anyone other than her parents cared that she went missing.
I'm going to say this because I think this is going to come up a lot in these books moving forward. Since they're told from the perspective of the child, if we see the world as the children see them, maybe Jerry was specifically driving around the neighborhood like looking for trouble, but we don't see any of that because the kids are just like, oh, it's Jerry. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for scaring away Spidey. Bye. And then they just go on their way. But like, we're missing all the grown up important thoughts because it's all the children's important thoughts, which is like dead camera. So that's how I'm going to choose to look at it when grown ups behave weird.
I think that's fair, and I think that the clever way that R.L. Stine wrote these books is that some things are left ambiguous that don't corner him in any way whatsoever. He's very sly. So,
and I will excuse him to the day I die.
Hey, he's a great man. And Sherry says, you know what? You're right. I will go with you, Greg, to the Kaufman house tomorrow to return the camera. Spidey will leave us alone. I didn't like being chased by him. That was frightening. Dum, dum, dum. Chapter 27. We're back at the Kaufman house, Dylan. It's a little after 3 p.m. That's specified, so it must be daylight.
So that is important, yeah. We do like daylight. It's not so creepy in the house. Maybe things are going to match up in photographs that we've seen. I don't know. But they meet at the Kaufman house, not the Coffin house.
Oh,
a little bit of Freudian slip there. That makes sense. Moving along, but you know, they decide to go into the house. They're gonna go straight into the heart of the house. Put that camera back where they found it because that is the sane thing to do. That is exactly what you might want to do.
If this is Spidey's house, put it in the mailbox. Put it on the front steps.
The foyer.
You don't have to go all the way back down in there. He'll find it.
Just wait on the front steps for him and be like, listen, Jerry's just around the corner. Here's your camera. It's shit. Done.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess they're like, if we put it back exactly where it went, I'm sure he'll find it. Like, how's he supposed to know? That's the other thing. They put it back in the hiding place. Why is he ever going to check there again? He's never going to know that they put it back. So, they're just dumb kids.
Dumb
and
kids.
So they get inside the house, and then all of a sudden, big crash. Just ruckus behind them. And da-da-da-dun.
Oh, was that was your. It was a very quick dum dum dum. Okay, it was a.
No, yeah, because we're running up to the end of the book. That's
we are.
Like,
we are
hitting that pace. So wind slammed the door.
Oh, it was the wind.
But, yeah, yeah. And so Sherry and Greg are trying to go sneak. They're stealthing through this house. They've got like, I hate stealth games. I can't even reference them. But Sherry finally suggests like just leave it like on the kitchen counter.
Do it.
Greg's like no.
Greg,
have to put it back.
God, in the secret damn it! Spot. No,
Greg. I think I've been doing that all night. To be honest, Craig and Greg. So, Greg goes downstairs with Sherry. Starts turning that vise. Door pops open. He's excited because he found another secret compartment. Puts that camera back. Cranks the handle. Oh, maybe you just shut it again. I don't know. I don't know about the mechanics. They feel great. They're done. They dropped the camera off.
Only some get
scary
out of here.
Wind upstairs. So they turn, walk up the basement stairs, and they see Spidey, because this is where he lives. And he's blocking the way. And there's no escape. Except for the cellar doors.
Yeah. It technically is an escape. And potentially a window.
That's true, too. Yeah, because he had his hands pressed against it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like and we know of the window in another way here soon. So, but, Spidey, as they're trying to get up the steps, and of course they just ran into Spidey blocking them, he walks them back down the steps. You know, they're going backward. He's going forward. You can picture it. And they tell him, listen, guy, we returned your stinking camera. And he says, let's see. I don't know. How would you do that voice, Dylan? You did the Spidey earlier.
Well, because it wasn't raspy, too. It was weird. It was like, let's see. Like, it was more like, I don't know. It was softer, actually. Like kind of imagine touching...
Like a Vincent Price, almost.
Imagine touching a woman's cheeks. She's about 85 years old, and she hasn't moved in the last 5 years. Just the softest, oldest skin.
Okay. He looks older, but sounds younger than they imagined, as Dylan continues to pet his old cheeks. And he tells them, he's like, hey, this camera, pretty evil. And they're like, we know. He's like, now listen, I helped create it. You what? You know how to build cameras, bro? Turns out, Spidey was a scientist, and his name is Dr. Fritz Fredericks.
If only we had Vyar here.
Yeah, that's a very German-sounding name, Fritz Fredericks.
Dr. Fritz, it feels very, this whole little mini-section feels very, like, 40s, 50s horror, like kind of like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of horror, like
a tad reanimator.
Fritz Fredericks,
Spidey here, Fritz Fredericks, which is hard to say five times real fast. He says actually his lab partner created this camera, but because he, Dr. Fred, we'll call him, is evil and greedy, he stole the plants. And Dr. Fred says his partner was even more evil. Evil, I say, not evil. Evil is what I meant. Dabbled in dark arts, rather, and was a master and put a curse on the camera so that Dr. Fred couldn't profit from it.
Got it.
What I don't understand, because Dr. Fred, he's telling us how, like, because of the camera, he's lost his family, his friends, like, loved ones have died. He's been ruined, basically. Like, the reason why he's in this state is because of this camera. And he's even told him, like, you can't even destroy it. I've tried so many times. There's no way to destroy it. And he's almost taken it upon himself to say, like, I've taken it upon myself to guard it and make sure it doesn't fall into anyone else's hands. Like, stop taking pictures, bro. Like,
yeah, put it away.
When your wife died in mysterious circumstances from the special camera, why did you start taking pictures of Nana and your kids and your best friend Paul? Like, how many pictures did he take in one go?
Before he was like, was it one big family pic? Maybe, maybe that got him.
Or he took a picture of the house and the picture came out on fire, and you don't even need individuals in that. Like,
why did I laugh at that? That's horrible. But no, you
I don't know. I've made you laugh at some terrible things tonight.
I laughed from the realization. I do that when I'm like, oh, of course, is what I meant. But yeah, and It's strange, and you're right. Like, why keep using it? But, you know, it's torn him to bits, and that's why he's become the town spider. And he's just lurking around in houses as a vagabond. And he learned that it cannot be destroyed, which is why he hid it in the special compartment that only another 12-year-old boy could solve. Not a lot of good security on this. It's in a house that looks abandoned that people... If a house doesn't look abandoned, you won't go in it. It's the abandoned houses that people are just running in all the time and looking at. That's not a good place to hide anything. And then it's just, you have to crank a handle and the door opens. I mean, get a fucking padlock. Problem solved. Bury
it. Just bury it.
Bury it.
Just bury it really, really, really deep. Like, don't make it. Well, he made a desk with a special, like, shovel. Just buy a shovel, man.
Yeah. Tie some rocks around it and throw it in the frickin' ocean.
Huh? That's how they got rid of the monkey with the symbols.
Is that right?
Yeah. Huh.
That's sad. Sometimes people say they can still hear those symbols clang together when they go over certain parts of the meridian. Heard that.
It sounds almost like they're almost out of danger. Because Dr. Frey's like, evil camera, I protect. Ha ha. It's like, so he's a little crazy, probably very dangerous, but at least he's like, bad thing must stay away and hidden in the mm-hmm. darkness. It's not like he's going to take the camera and start taking pictures of everybody. But then Greg and Sherry are just like, well, you got your camera, you've and your hobby. We're going to skedaddle. But Spidey stops them with probably the worst thing to say to anybody in a basement. You know too much.
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
I'm sorry, you always wait for me to do the dum-dum-dums, and I'm like, no, but that's Travis's job.
I'll do them all. We'll decide right here. The rest of the series, I'll do dum-dum-dum. Chapter 30. Okay, they know too much, which means, of course, they have to die. Oh, no. Well, let's see how this goes. So, he can't let them go. He makes a move toward Greg. A real, I guess he's like, I'm going to make a move like a, he's making a move there, and Sherry takes a chance. She grabs the camera. Much the way that Greg grabbed it from Mickey. We got a lot of steals out here on the court. Mm-hmm. And Spidey, he tries to get it from her. Give me back that camera. And after a struggle, the camera's flash goes off. We've seen this one play out before. The camera goes off. Sherry screams, run! Dum, dum, dum! Chapter 31, the final chapter, Dylan. Let's go.
So Sherry is, she doesn't know whose picture was taken, and they just need to go. Like, she still got it in her hand, but they book it. And these things take a long time to develop, as we've seen. Like, they can get all the way home. But as they book up the stairs, like, they hear Spidey, like, scream in pain, and then they just kind of fade as they run from the house. But again, just like with the two bullies, they turn around and realize that he didn't chase after them. And I guess in the spirit of fair play, they're like, we need to make sure he's okay. Like, he was involved in the chase. And so they go back and they look through the window, right? They don't go into the basement.
Right.
I think. And they see him lying on the ground, his face in a twisted shock thing.
Twisted O of shock, which is... interesting way to put it. But I imagine it's like, you know that part in The Ring where they cut to the guy in the recliner who's like, that guy's face? That's what I imagined.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Frozen. Dead. Just like that.
Just like that.
And it turns out the camera both killed him and didn't kill him, which is nice. Because the camera didn't need to curse him to kill him because he died of a heart attack.
Right.
It was him knowing that the camera could kill him that killed him, not the camera actually killing him. If you follow my meaning. Like, the camera caused that car accident somehow. Like, it got up one night, cut the brake lines in that other guy's car. Like, however it did it. But, like, did the camera kill him, or did Spider just, his heart gave out?
Right.
Like, was it actually a curse? But it did still cause the death, arguably.
Yeah, I mean... It's as culpable as, you know, bacon grease or whatever really got him. Yeah.
Here's the other thing.
Yeah.
What if that's the camera's intent this whole time?
Was to kill Spidey?
To kill Spidey. Okay, think about it. It didn't kill Sherry. And when it realized that Greg wasn't going back to the house because Michael and Bird are too chicken shit.
Mm-hmm.
Bird to go back with him. Sherry comes back all of a sudden. There's a picture of them in the Kaufman house. Like, why did the camera put them there? It brought someone back. And I mean, think that's because the camera's end goal was to finally kill the person that was keeping it locked up and stole it in the first place.
It did. I would say there were probably more efficient ways for the camera to pull this off. It did break a boy's neck and fuck a dad up pretty good.
Well, yeah, it's still a hateful thing. But think about that. It didn't kill Terry either, because all it did for Terry was do the same thing that would have happened anyway once the car accident happened, because Carrie was scared by the news from his dad. So I think the camera was actually
trying to wedge its way back.
Spidey's dead, and then, I don't know, maybe the camera could get back out on the world and have some fun again. I don't know. I'm just saying that's a possibility.
It wants to get back on the Harley and ride the open road and do camera killing stuff.
But they finally look at the picture, and Sherry takes it out, and they see that it's the same expression on Spidey's face in the picture, and that she was not photographed. It would have been great if she had been photographed, and Spidey really did just die of a heart attack, and like Sherry's still next.
Oh, yeah. That's fair. And also, since I'm going to call the button on a camera a trigger, I'm going to say Sherry pulled the trigger. I'm going to say Sherry killed this man. I'm going to put the blame on her.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to take magic out of it.
Sherry is 100% going to have the most interesting life forever because she disappeared for 2 days. And when she came back, she straight up murdered a man with a hidden camera that only one other person knows about. And, They take the camera back to the hidey hole, and they finally decide, you know what? Danger's over. Let's call the cops.
Yeah.
Call the cops, report the body so he doesn't smell the whole place up, and, you know, we'll say, we're going to break in the house, and then we saw his dead body, and they finally think of a good excuse. I'm guessing Sherry thought that one up, and, you know what?
But it's still a little weird in that we can't. Sherry was missing for 2 days, and then the next time she shows up on the cop's radar, she's in an abandoned house with a dead guy. And it's like, okay, what did he do to you?
It doesn't matter anymore, right?
I guess.
He's dead.
Cops need those answers. Well, anyway, they
bring Spidey in for questioning immediately. Like, he was the first person who got hauled into that jail, though.
Right, you'd think. Well, 2 days later, Sherry and Greg are talking with Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, and they tell them what they told the cops. They went to the house to get out of the rain. It started to rain. If you remember, the wind closed that door. It was a storm was a brewing. They tried to get out of the rain. They explored until the storm passed. The cops, they think Spidey probably had died of heart failure. No telling how long he'd been there. And they never even mentioned the camera. So, all swept under the rug. Cops in these small towns don't do a whole lot of. They don't ask a second question. They ask a first question. If you answer it, they'll move on. It's good cops.
Do you see any threads leading away from this that need to be untangled? I don't. Case closed.
Case just closed.
Put a condemned sign on that building and walk away, because no good comes out of that one.
That's right. Meanwhile, back at the Kaufman House, Dylan, a little bit more going on there, actually. We're not done yet. It's revealed that the two bullies, Mickey and Joey, they happen to watch through the basement window, and now they have the camera. Joey raises the viewfinder, looks at Mickey, and says, "Hey, Mickey, say cheese." And they wait to see what would develop. The end.
Bum, bum. Oh, wait, no, that's the end. That's definitely a bum, 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 though.
It is. I don't know how we say it. I mean, there is a Say Cheese and Die Part 2.
Only one sequel?
I think. I'm not an expert. I just do the podcast.
I've never read that one, actually.
Neither have I. So we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll kick off with Mickey and Joey and the camera. But that's going to wrap up that book, Dylan. I love that one. I like that one quite a bit. It gets pretty dark in some spots, and I think that might be really what appeals to me at my old age, but I think even as a kid, I would have found this one to be the scariest of the bunch by a good long margin.
It's It follows through on, I think, what I said about, like, Monster Blood, where he feels like he's hit a stride with the books and, like, the formula that he's going to be using for more or less the rest of the series. Like, Monster Blood felt like the first solid Goosebumps book, and this one is, like, the next one, and I think this one does an even better job.
I agree.
Of, like, keeping the action moving, and like the pacing was good. I feel like the bullies were kind of tossed in at the last moment because he's like, oh, you know what'd be a really cool ending, because they only show up one other time in the story, and it's pretty late in the story too, whereas like the twins that harass Evan are like, yeah, you see them like three or four times throughout the book, and they show up pretty early on, like in the first act. But I really enjoyed this one, like it because I kind of like this, the cursed item story. I enjoy that a lot.
I like too that the camera was a kind of a character on its own. It had there was always some unpredictability with the camera. When you took that picture, I wanted to know immediately, all right, what's on the picture? What did we get? And that kind of kept me going. It was nice suspense all the way through.
No, and again, it does have those same darker elements that really strike a chord with especially a true crime fan this time.
Yeah, I think so.
Just it's I think he's got a good handle on what he needs to do in these books at this point, and I think it's showing, and I'm kind of excited to see where it goes from here, because I think the engine's rumbling now, and we're roaring down the highway at 75 miles per hour in a blue station wagon at this point.
Hope we don't wreck. Find those headlamps. Well, I think that's going to wrap this one up. I think we lauded it quite a bit. I don't know that we could say much else about it. We did a fair amount of assessment throughout our recapturing or our explanation of the plot here. So I think that's going to wrap it up. We got to get to our rating scheme here. I'm going to give this one, Dylan, 7 out of 7 broken dad bones.
Oh, but which ones? If it's just a bunch of ribs, I don't feel like that's...
Sure. Well, we got an ulna, 2 tibia, a fibia, a collarbone, a tooth randomly, and a skull. And if that equals 7, we got lucky.
Yeah, and that fractured skull, like that's like a gold star on top of another gold star, to be honest, in my definition, which is horrifying.
I'm interested to see if any of the rest of the, which one is this, number 4, if the other 58 books can top this one, I'd be excited. This is pretty good.
I have to... Listen, I know you haven't read as many of them as I have, although my memory is so cheeseclothy about some of them that I don't remember any of them. There's still some good times ahead, don't you worry. I think I'll give this, you know what? I will give this 10 out of 10 Kodak moments on the set of Forensic Files. Like, that's just, I think that, yeah.
That's perfect. A Kodak like moment.
A nice Kodak moment of some impossibly named scientist as they talk about cricket breeding and how that helped them find the child murderer in Pittsfield.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, wouldn't you hate to be the guy that got locked away for life because crickets fucked weird one time near where you did something bad?
You know what? I think I'd be pretty proud of myself if that's how they had to catch me. I think I'd be pretty like, you know what? Well done.
If you furthered science because you murdered a family, you would be like, you know what? Not an entire loss, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a win for somebody out there. Anyway, folks, that's going to wrap us up here. We like the book, apparently. Say cheese and die. And now, finally, the Twitter account makes sense. But if you would like to email the show, give us some feedback, let us know what your favorite Goosebump book was. Maybe you have a memory of a creeper in your neighborhood. Send those in. In fact, if you have some childhood spooky stories, we might be able to put that in as a bonus episode. We'd love to take in your stories, whether it involves the Goosebumps books or just your own Goosebumps. So do that at wegotgoosebumpspodcast@gmail.com.
And if you want to talk to us on Twitter, which we are on, and we are constantly, even now, when there's no episodes, posting and chatting away about the books that we're reading, find us at Say Cheese and Pod. Again, that is at Say Cheese and Pod, all spelled out. No ampersands or an N or anything like that.
No junk.
It's just Say Cheese and Pod on Twitter.
All alphabet, no junk. You can support the show on Patreon. Head on over to patreon.com/polykill. This podcast is a part of the Polymedia Network, so you can head on over to polymedianetwork.com if you'd like to see some other shows on our network. Most of them center on gaming, but there are some others for some relaxed conversation here and there regarding alcohol and movies and all sorts of stuff. So go over there, check it out, see if you find some other shows you might like. Now, Dylan, this is where we give a preview to our next episode. We flipped over to the back of the book. Let's see what we've got for number 5.
Gabe just got lost in a pyramid. One minute, his crazy cousin Sari was right ahead of him in the pyramid tunnel. The next minute, she disappeared. But Gabe isn't alone. Someone else is in the pyramid too. Someone. Or something. Gabe doesn't believe in the curse of the mummy's tomb. But that doesn't mean that the curse isn't real. Does it?